Blog Talk Radio.
Bichamo apura kanu apura kaitnuk neye akanfo nanasom da medinde ujirafo kwesi ra nehem pata akan akwamumai na maruka tivimu ujirafo. That means greetings to all apura kani apura kaitni people, meaning Africans, black people. Today it's akanfo nanasom day. My name is Ojirafo Kwesi Radnehem Pata Akan. Akwamu Maina Maruka Etifimu Ojirafo, meaning the Ojirafo of the Akwamu Nation in North America. So we're going to get back to, this is the second edition of our Akanfo Nanasom program, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestral Religion. We just started Akanfo Nanasom as a weekly program last Monday, and this will be continuous in connection with our other two shows. So weekly we have three shows on Blog Talk. All of them start at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Joada Monday, Akanfo Nanasom, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestral Religion. On Benada or Abenada, which is Tuesday, we have Ujira, which means purification. We're dealing with various aspects of ancestral religious culture. And on Akuada or Awukuda, which is Wednesday, we have Egua, which means marketplace. And that's the day that we typically have a guest on who talks about their product and or service that they offer, business that they offer to the Afurakani, Afurakaitni community. And we our guests also share our ancestral values as well. So every week, 9 p.m. Eastern, on Blog Talk, Joda, Denada, Awukuda, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. What we're going to get into today, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. So a couple of links. In fact, all of the links for the different articles that we're going to deal with today, you can find it. We're going to post this in the chat room. On our website, on the Akanfo Nanasom page on our website. So it's ojirafo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F as in free, O.com/Akanfo, A-K-A-N-F as in free, O underscore N-A-N-A. SOM.html, ojirafo.com/akanfo_nanasom.html. All of the articles that we're talking about tonight, that we talked about last week, all of the links you can, to those various articles you can find on the website. And we're going to just want to send out a message right quick to let people know, remind people of that we're on for the new show. And in the meantime, you can be pulling out or pulling down the first article portion of the term Samanfo in Kemet. We're going to deal with that one. We're also going to deal with Akwamu, the origin of the name Akwamu in Kanit and Kemet. That article is also on the same page. All these links are on the same page. And let's see. We're also going to deal with Samainkom and the seven senses. So all of those are all together on the same page. And you can download those. We just send it out. Just want to make sure everybody got that message right quick. Let me see. Want to make sure. Okay. And we want to make sure that this other link is sent out. All right. Now, before we get started, we have an announcement, and we're going to make the announcement in the mid-show as well, midway through. We will be in Philadelphia conducting a workshop, doing a presentation on September 13th at 1 o'clock p.m. At the Our Black Comeback Center, 25th and York Street in Philadelphia. We sent an event notification out about that on different pages on our website. So when you go to the OGDOFO.com website, we have posted that information. We also sent it to our Facebook group. We have a Facebook group called Akanfo Nanasom on Facebook. And then we also have, of course, our private social network, which is apuraka-apuraikayet.ning.com. That is a social network that we own, similar to Facebook, except it's private. You can join that network. We have discussions, of course, post videos, post articles, updates on books, events, various different things. People who are studying the same information, Afurakani, Afurakai, the ancestral culture, religion, and Amaintesu, nation building restoration. People are studying that kind of information from here in North America as well as around the world. We have hundreds of people on the site. Everybody is studying the same kind of information. You can network, connect with people who are studying the same information. You may even connect with people you find who are in your area that you didn't know about. And we always update that social network first, as well as information on the website whenever new events are coming up, whenever we publish new books, release any new articles, anything that's happening. We update that network first, as well as our regular website, and then, of course, on the Facebook group. And then we always make announcements on the show. So, again, for those who just came in, September 13th, 1 p.m., we will be back in Philadelphia conducting a presentation, workshop, dealing with Nanasom, Afurakani, Afurakaitini, ancestral religion in America. So how it impacts us, how we have inherited our Afurakani, Afurakaitini, our African ancestral religious practices through our blood circles, how we carry this ancestral culture into the West, even through the Musuo Kesie, the great perversity, the enslavement era, we still carry these traditions. We held on to our culture, and it was through these traditions, through these practices, which direct us to harmonize our thoughts, intentions, and actions with Nyamewa, Nyame, and Sheshie, which is divine order, that we were able to not only survive, but to free ourselves from enslavement. It was through the actions of those individuals who embraced our ancestral culture that empowered them to organize, to revolt, wage war against the whites and their offspring, kill the whites and their offspring, and force the end of enslavement in this hemisphere. So we're going to get into detail about that, get into how we, you know, inherited these cultures, these traditions, and they are still with us today, and we are not dependent on anyone outside of our ancestral blood circle, our direct Nananom Nsumafo, spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors for our culture. We don't go outside our blood circle for our culture. We've inherited that transcarnationally through reincarnation, through successive reincarnation. We have been here in the past through Bebra, which is the Akan term for coming again or being born again, reborn, returning through a womb, through a specific blood circle. We have returned through our blood circle. We have returned. We are just like our children are. We are ancestresses and ancestors who have returned. We have a culture that we lived in the past, and we carry that culture right back with us spiritually back into the world when we have returned to the world, and we still have those cultures today. And what we are doing simply is reawakening that dormant understanding of that inherent, intrinsic, innate amambre or culture. So we're going to get into that, on September 13th. We will have our publication at the event. To date, we have 10 publications in soft cover. We have 15 books that we've published. We have over 60 articles, about 48 videos, most of them about two hours each or more. where we examine our publications. Those videos are posted on the website as well as on YouTube. All of that information is free, of course. We have about 29 videos, broadcast archives from Blog Talk Radio. Most of them are between 2 and 3 hours. All of those archives are free as well, where we examine our publications and all kinds of information related to ancestral religion, culture, and nation building. And so the ebook versions of all of our publications are free. All of our books are free as ebooks. All of the research articles are free as ebooks, and of course the videos and broadcast archive. The soft cover books, to date, out of the 15 books, we have 10 in soft cover in addition to the ebook version, the free ebook version. And we will have those 10 books. We are working to have all, make sure we have all 10 of them at the event. We will be giving away one copy of one of our books for free. So every time we do an event in the various cities that we have gone to and that we go to, we always give away a free copy of one of our publications to everybody who is in attendance. And these events, of course, are for Afurakani, Afurakaini, or African black people only. So we give away a free copy of one of our soft cover publications to all attendees to our event. And we've been doing that for the past year since we started printing the soft cover versions out. We've given away over 350 free copies of our soft cover books. We want to continue that program wherever we go, whatever city we go to. So what we're doing right now is we're raising funds for that initiative through the sale of our books. So what we're doing today, as a matter of fact, and of course we have our books on the website, the soft cover versions for sale just in general, they range between $8 and $11. So we have one that is $8. We have three that are $9. Five of them are $10, and one of them is $11. So the 10 books we have out now just range from $8 to $11. What we have all together, if, like sometimes people will just buy the entire set, and the entire set of 10 books is actually $96 plus shipping, plus $9 shipping. What we're doing tonight and into tomorrow as a special for those who are attuned to the show and as a way for us to raise funds quickly so we can order the supplies. We print our own books on our own printers, and we print in color. So we want to, and we have to order out the ink and so forth for a good rate. So we're trying to do that as soon as possible so we can have enough to take to Philly with us. So for those who are listening tonight, as well as into tomorrow, by the end of the day tomorrow, we're having a special with regard to the books. So if somebody orders 5 books, if you go to the website and you order 5 books and just say for 5 books tonight or tomorrow, then we will actually send you the entire 10-book set. So say you ordered 5 books and it came up to like $50. Instead of just us sending you the 5, we're going to send you the entire 10. So instead of paying $96 for 10, you'll be paying basically on average like $50 for the entire set of 10. So for those who want to participate in that, you'll get 10 books. You're basically getting them for 50% off. And the price is $8 to $11. They're already inexpensive. We make our books inexpensive. We don't want to try to, you know, overdo it with the price. We want our people, as many of our people, to access our publications as possible because the information is relevant. This is why we make the ebook versions free no matter what, so everybody has access to them, and whether you have any funds or not, whether you have the capacity to, you know, if you have a laptop or something or not, even people who have, as long as you have a cell phone, you can download the PDF, full-color PDF versions of our books for free. But for the soft cover versions, we make them inexpensive. So, but even more inexpensive for tonight and tomorrow while we're trying to get these funds together so we can make a bulk order of colored ink so we can print these books out for the upcoming free book giveaway, and as well just to have enough copies of all of the 10 books available for the event on the 13th. Anyone who orders 5 books tonight, we will send you the entire 10-book set. So basically, instead of, again, paying $96 for 10 books, basically $9 a book on average, $9.50 for average, basically you'll be spending on average $50 if you buy 5 books, around $50, $48, $50, depending on what combination of 5. And if you order those tonight, we will send you the entire 10-book set that we have right now. So, and we'll announce that again because we know people come in and out, sometimes come in late. And then you can also share this information with your contacts. You can email your contacts on Facebook as well as other people so that they will know that for between now and tomorrow, we're going to have this special deal going, and people will be able to get those books. And typically when people get the soft cover books in color, they're very impressed with the book. They love the information, and they typically share the information with people in their family, coworkers, friends, and the books begin to circulate in the community so they can reach people that otherwise we wouldn't have been able to reach. So, of course, again, that's the value of having the soft covers out in the community, and that's one reason we give away at least one copy of our soft cover book to every single person that comes to our event. In addition to that, we never charge for a lecture. So when people come out to a venue to come hear about ancestral religion, we should not be charging people to come out to hear their own ancestral culture. So we never charge an admissions fee ever. And then we also give away a free book. That's in contrast to some individuals who actually charge large amounts to organizers for the event. Like, we do not charge a speaker's fee when we come out and do presentations in different cities, whether we've been to Tennessee or Connecticut or Louisiana or Delaware, Baltimore. We've been to Philly a few times. Different places that we've gone to, Virginia, North Carolina, various places. We don't charge a speaker's fee. And, of course, we don't charge admissions fee. Interestingly, some individuals very often who are charging large speakers' fees very often are teaching information that's inaccurate. So not only are you paying to get in, but you're receiving a mixture of basic information that you can find anywhere on the Internet about true historical information, but then their interpretation of the data very often is inaccurate and misinformed. So you're paying for misinformation, and then on top of just to get in the door. And then on top of that, any book that they have, of course, you're going to pay additional as well. We want to make sure accurate information gets out to our people. And, of course, the whites and their offspring, the Achiwadiefo, the spirits of disorder. And, of course, we defined Achiwadiefo last week. An Akan term, Achiwadie, Adie means things, objects, deeds, or entities. Cheat means to hate. So Achiwadie or Achide, Achiwadie are those things that are divinely hated by the Supreme Being, the Great Mother and Great Father, Inyamewa, Inyame, or Amenet and Amen. They are both some of the forces in nature, the Nanonoman Sumanfo, the ancestresses and ancestors. Of course, they are both some of the forces in nature, are the goddesses and gods, the spirits that animate the sun, moon, earth, mother, planets, black substance of space. They are children of the Supreme Being. They're the divinity. The taboos, Achiwadie, those things are divinely hated or prohibited. And the term they have given us is Achiwadiefo, meaning the people or group that are divinely hated, divinely restricted, divinely rejected. The taboo people, the spirits of disorder, those who incarnate as spirits of disorder. These are the whites and their offspring, all non-black people, non-Afurakani, non-Afurakani people. Whether it's white Europeans, white Americans, white Hindus, white Arabs, white Hispanics, white so-called Latinos and Latinas, white Asians, white pseudo-Native Americans who are not Native American at all. They're just Asians who migrated, invaded this hemisphere when black people were already here after we had migrated from Afuraka, Afuraka. These are the whites and their offspring. They are not us, and we are not them. And we defined the difference between us last week showing that we have a cry, a soul, a divine consciousness. They do not. And then on top of that, of course, the melanin deficiencies and the morphological characteristics that separate us from them. But primarily it's the lack of the ka at the soul, the divine consciousness called okra, no krawa, and akan that separates us from them. So we went into all that information last week. Of course, we'll brush up on some of that. But we whitening our offspring, the Achiwadi fold, the spirits of disorder, they're constantly disseminating misinformation. They give out free Bibles, free Qurans, free Bhagavad Gita, free pseudo-religious, false religious texts to our people every single day, all over the country and all over the world. Wherever we are, whether we're in the community, they're giving out free Bibles. If people get locked up and they go to jail, they're giving away free Bibles on tape, free Qurans and everything else. You go into a hotel room, it's free Bible there. So they're always constantly bombarding us with misinformation. At the same time, when we have accurate information, some of our people, they will not release it. But they're going to hold every bit of information they possibly can hold for ransom. So some people engage that process. For us, you know, we make the PDF versions, ebook versions of our book free, all of them immediately upon publishing, they're all free. And then the soft cover versions, since we print them on our own printers and so forth, that is a cost. We try to make them inexpensive and so forth. But when we go to different events, we give out one whenever we can, and we've been able to do it at every single event so far because of support from the community. Only because we have support from the community for these different events and leading up to these events have we been able to give away a free copy of books to almost everybody who can. It was only like maybe the first event where it was two or three people where we ran out of books and two or three people didn't get one at that moment. But all the rest of the events over the past year, we've been able to give away free books, and we've given away over 350 so far. So we want to keep that going next week. And to the events that are coming up, we have inquiries from different cities, so we'll be letting you know when those are coming up. So, again, for those people who just came in, let me check the phone lines. Oh, once again, also, if you want to make a comment, you have a question in the chat room, you have to log in order to interact in the chat room. If you have a question on the phone line, just hit the number 1 so we can see that your hand is raised, and we will connect with you. We see we have a message here. Let's go to the article, first publication, The Origin of the Term Nsamanfo in Kemet. So we're going to deal with the Nsamanfo in the Akan language, which is the term for ancestresses and ancestors. Last week we went into detailed information about the origin of Akanfo, Akan people, how we came into being. We migrated from ancient Kanat, which is a title of ancient Nubia. We showed that the term Kanat, or the Kanit land, and the Kanat people, or the Kanit people, are the Akani people today in West Africa, and some of us, of course, were taken from the western part of the continent and forced into enslavement in North, Central, and South America and the Caribbean and Europe, and we freed ourselves from enslavement through warfare. That was the basis of our liberation, emancipation. We show the linguistic connection, genetic, cosmological, ritual, archaeological, and so forth, showing that we are the same people migrating to these different regions. We talked about the differences between ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion and the way things have become corrupted and why we are restoring ancestral religion in its pure form. We talked about Ojida purification operationalizes Nanasom, Afurakani, Afurakani ancestral religion. We purify our thoughts, intentions, and actions so we can move forward and engage life in a harmonious fashion and engage in ritual practices in a harmonious fashion. So we went into that information last week, and now we're going to get into, again, ancient, authentic, icon, ancestral religion. And even though we're talking about Akanfo Nanasom, meaning Akan ancestral religion, Nanasom in general is Afurakani, Afuraikaini, meaning African ancestral religion. And of course, we have the book Afuraka, Afuraikai, the origin of the term Africa, showing that the name Ka means a high land, and Afura is the title of the creator. So Afura Ka means the land, Ka of Afura, the creator, and Afuraikaiat is the land, Kaiat of the creatress, Afuraikaiat. So these are the male and female terms for the original land, the divine land, the first land. And Afuraka is where the term Afrika or Africa actually comes from. So our book proves that conclusively. We're the first to publish that information and prove that conclusively. And also disqualify all of the misinformation and the false etymologies put forward by the whites and their offspring and very often propagated by misinformed individuals in our own community, trying to assert that the name Africa comes from Europeans, from Scipio Africanus or Leo Africanus or Latin, Greek, Sanskrit, Phoenician, Arabic, and so forth. And it, of course, comes from none of those sources, and we show those terms that they mentioned from all of those sources and show where those terms actually come from and show how their corruptions from terms from ancient Kemet. So we go into that, but traditional or ancestral religion, Afurakani, Afuraikaidi, meaning African ancestral religion, the term we use is Nanasom as a catch-all or umbrella term for that, no matter what expression it is. You can have Yoruba Nanasom, Yoruba ancestral religion. Ebe, Afon, Nanasom, which is Vodun, ancestral religion. Igbo Nanasom, or Igbo ancestral religion. Or Maasai, Nanasom, Maasai, ancestral religion. The expression of Nanasom, founded in ancient Kanat, Nubia, shown in ancient Kemet, wherever we migrated around the world, these various expressions of ancestral religion. The key term here is ancestral. And there's a reason why we use the term ancestral. Some people say traditional African religion or African traditional religion, African spirituality, African traditional spirituality, but it's ancestral for two major reasons. Number one, of course, we inherit through traditions, through our blood circle, through via Debra, reincarnation, returning through our blood circles. We receive the tradition from our ancestresses and ancestors directly. And we're going to get into what that means, but we don't go and, you know, just read some books, memorize some verses and nonsense like that, like with the fictional false religions of the Bible, Quran, Talmud, and all that other nonsense. Our traditions are ancestrally inherited. The other major reason is because our greatest ancestor and greatest ancestress as Afurakani, Afuraikaini people, meaning African or black people, and only Afurakani, Afuraikaini people, our greatest ancestor and ancestress is Amen and Amenet, often called Amen Ra Amenet Raek, the great father and the great mother in Akan. Amen is called Nyame, and Amenet or Amenat is called Nyamewa, the great father and the great mother who together comprise the supreme being. There is a father and a mother from the beginning. There's never been a time when there was just a male divinity who was the supreme being. There's never been a time when there was just a female divinity that was the supreme being. Both of those notions are false. It's based on the dissexuality, homosexuality, the perverse mindset, perverse spirit of the white offspring. Yes, it is true that Negroes in the community mimic the whites and their offspring and promote these false doctrines, whether they're saying, and they just blacken them up. So instead of saying there was the great God and he was a male and being white, they just blacken up the great God, and now they say, well, there was just a God, and he was this, and he was that, and he is this, and he created the world, and he. And then they go further with the foolishness, the black man is God. Then you have Negroes on the other side, females, who would say that originally there was just a female divinity, a goddess, and all the male gods come from the original female, and she created the universe, and she created this, and she created that, and so forth, and then saying the black woman is goddess or the black woman is God. Both of those positions come from dissexuality, homosexuality promoted by the whites and their offspring. Yes, many of our people have low self-esteem. Yes, many of our people still worship the whites and their offspring undercover on the low. So they still embrace the nonsense of the whites and their offspring. They have a sense of inferiority, a sense of inadequacy that's been forced on us by the whites and their offspring. So to compensate for that sense of inadequacy or inferiority, they want to go to the top and say, well, I'm not just an inferior person or inferior being. Actually, I'm God. And they have a false sense of what a god or a goddess is because they got the definition from the whites and their offspring. So they identify with that false definition based on the fact that they really feel inferior and still believe that. So they identify themselves as saying, I'm God, I'm the goddess, or they may just say, even if they're female, they say, I'm God, and come up with all kinds of foolish etymologies about the term God. Of course, one of our books, Anidaho, one section in that book is the article detail the origin of the term God, where we give the actual etymology for that term that nobody produced until we produced that information. So these false etymologies floating around are inaccurate. So that's one of the books that if you order the five we talked about earlier, between today and tomorrow, we will actually send you all 10 books for the price of five. So, and we'll bring that up again throughout the webcast. So, but the real sense, when we talk about the real great father and the great mother, Nyamewa, Amen, Amenet, from the very beginning, there's always been the male and the female, two separate entities functioning together in harmony as a unit. This is why it takes a male and a female to function as two halves of a whole as a unit to create a child that comes from the foundational relationship of Nyamewa and Nyame, Amenet, and Amen. From the earliest religious compositions that have been unearthed to date, which are the Meru texts, you will find a so-called pyramid text that are earlier than any other religious compositions unearthed anywhere in the world, you will find Amen and Amenet together, functioning together harmoniously in those texts. And you, of course, you will find images and statues and reliefs of Amen and Amenet together. So they are our greatest ancestor and ancestress. And notice we use the terms, if we're going to use English to be descriptive, it's best to use the actual terms from our languages. But even when we're speaking English and we're using descriptive terms, we should be precise. This is why you notice that we have used from the beginning, from our first publication in 12,997, which is December, which in this culture would be December of 1998, we published the Uben Sheng, the Ancestral Summons. You'll see the balance of male and female. We talk about the god and the goddess, the creator, the creatress, the goddesses and the gods, the ancestresses and the ancestors. When somebody says, I thank, you know, the creator, the gods, and the ancestors, first of all, they've cut off half of what the creator created universe when they talk like that. The creator, the gods, and the ancestors, while leaving out the creatress, the goddesses, and the ancestresses. So if we're going to use that language, we say the creator, the creatress, who was Ra and Ra'et, the goddesses and gods, Yahosom, the Orisha, the Vodou, the Ntoru and Ntorotu, the ancestresses and ancestors, the Aku, Akutu in ancient Kemet, the Nananom in Samapo and Akan, the Egungun in Yoruba, the Kuvito in Bodun, and so forth. But we also talk about the Supreme Being, the Great Mother and Great Father. As we talked about in the previous webcast, there's a difference between the Supreme Being, Amen and Amenet, Nyame, Nyamewa, and the creator and creatress, who are Ra and Ra'et, and they serve, they are servants of the Supreme Being. In fact, Ra and Ra'et are grandchildren of the Supreme Being. The creator and creatress are grandchildren of the Supreme Being. There's a difference between the Supreme Being and the creator and creatress. Of course, the whites in the offspring don't teach us that, and many of our people who have been reading texts about ancient Kemet and ancient cultures and simply repeating the information they've read from the whites and their offspring, they repeat the nonsense of the whites and their offspring. So they focus on Amen, Amen Ra. They'll try to conflate different divinities and say Amen and Ra and Ptah are all the same divinity, which is totally inaccurate. And they will say the Creator and the Supreme Being is the same thing, which is totally inaccurate. So, of course, through our publications, we set the record straight. And, of course, the record has been established. It's in ancient Kemet, its most extensive religious record anywhere in the world, and all of this information is there. But when we're brainwashed by the whites and their offspring, even though we think that we're scholars, we think that we're knowledgeable because we've been awarded degrees by the whites and their offspring and are constantly misinforming the people every day, every week, every month, every year, and every decade with false information because we've been misinformed, arrogant in our lack of knowledge, and promoting a false cosmology, it's a problem. So when people who actually connect with their ancestresses and ancestors, your Nsamampo, your ancestresses and ancestors, will make you recognize the value and the balance of male and female. And if you don't see it in what is written and what is talked about, your Nsamampo will make you go and find it because it's within your own kra, it's within your own soul, is within your own Tsum-Tsum-Ya spirit to establish that balance and recognize that balance. So you will search. Of course, we have done that, and other people do that as well, and we'll find the evidence of not just if somebody's talking about Amen, your cry, your Nsamampo will make you find out, well, who is Amenet? And, of course, the evidence is there because our people laid it out. However, some individuals just haven't done that because they're still enamored with the misinformation of the whites and their offspring. So Amen, Amenet, Nyame, Nyamewa, our greatest ancestor, greatest ancestress. They're the Supreme Being. The created universe is the body of the Supreme Being. And within that great divine body are smaller bodies, of course, which are the organs, just like the organs in your body are smaller bodies within your great body. You're the great being. The organs are the smaller beings within that great being, and they regulate order in the body. Okay, so it looks like the call had dropped. So if people can, send us an email in the chat or a message in the chat. Can you hear us? You can hear it? It's back on? Okay, you can hear it? Good. All right, sometimes for those who are familiar with Blog Talk Radio, you know that every now and then Blog Talk has a thing where the thing will drop, the call will drop sometimes, and then we typically will just call right back, and then it kicks back on. So we're talking about Amen, Amenet, great ancestor, great ancestress, the greatest. The body, the universe is the great divine body. The physical universe is the physical body within which, through which the spirit Amen and Amenet penetrate, permeate. And just like you have a body, a great divine body, basically, and your organs regulate order in your body. They are smaller bodies that regulate order within the great body, which is you. The deities, the Abosom, the Orisha, the Vodou, the Arusi, as they're called in Igbo, the Ntoru, Ntorotu, so-called Neteru, Netertu, the deities, the divine forces in nature, the gods and goddesses, they are the organs within the divine body of Amen and Amenet. They are the spirits that animate the sun, the spirits that animate the stars, the spirits that animate the Earth Mother and different regions of the Earth Mother, the oceans, rivers, red earth, black earth, atmosphere, and so forth, fire, the core of the earth, the magnetosphere, these various aspects of the Earth Mother, same thing with the sun, the Oria, same thing with the moon and other planets. These are the children, grandchildren of the Great Father and the Great Mother. They are the bodies within the smaller bodies within the great body, and they regulate order within the body. Then, of course, the cells are children of the organs. And your cells serve your organs, and when they serve the organs, they serve the whole being, which is you. And we are the cells of the organs, the children of the divinity. And when we serve our parent divinities, we serve the whole being at the same time. We as Apurakani Apurakaitni human beings, and only Apurakani Apurakaitni human beings, because we are the only human beings that were ever created. After we were created, that was the end of the creation of human beings. And then we had children and began to populate. And we talked about the origin of the White Narrow Spring last week when we talked about race and identity and a small percentage of cells becoming cancerous within your body, meaning they become disfigured. They no longer look like the other cells. They no longer operate as the other cells. They begin to consume and destroy the other cells unless their development is arrested by the immune system. The same thing occurs within the great black body of humanity that was created millions of years ago. At some point, a very tiny percentage, less than 1/100th of a percentage, become cancerous, disfigured, engaged in disordered behavior. They become cancerous and start attacking the other healthy cells. Typically, we would kill those cells and expel them, destroy them. Some of them escaped that killing, migrated, and were drawn up into northern Eurasia, but they also got caught up in the Ice Age at that time. Thousands of years later, when the Ice Age, ice begins to recede, and they begin to spill back into southern Europe, because we had already migrated up into southern Europe, they left that and were drawn up into northern Eurasia during the Ice Age. When the Ice Age is over and the ice begins to melt and they're able to move around again, now they begin to spill into southern Europe, North Afuraka, Afurakai. At this point, they have already become melanin recessive, already developed the extra vitiligo characteristics, meaning the melanin has been stripped from them, just like a person with vitiligo, because of incest inbreeding, creating a very high incidence of albinism within first and second generations. And after thousands of years of inbreeding in northern Eurasia, they produce populations of albinos, white skin, blonde hair, light eyes, extra vitiligo characteristics. These white skin, light-haired, light-eyed individuals begin to spill into southern Europe and into North Afuraka, Afurakai, and waging war whenever they can, losing wars for thousands of years until rather recently. So we talked about their origin and so forth. But we're the only created human being. So we are the cells within the organs of the great divine body. The other cells within the organs of the great divine body are plant life, animal life, and mineral life. So plant life, animal life, mineral life, and Apurakani Apurakaiti, human life, are the cells within the organs of the great divine body. If you look at that hierarchy, the most ancient ancestor, ancestress, is Nyame, Nyamewa, Amen, Amenet. The next level are their children, which are the Abosom, the organs, the Vodou, Orisha, and so forth. The next in the hierarchy, plant life, animal life, mineral life, and Afurakani, Afurakani, human life, and we are the cells. So here you see it, ancestral organization, an ancestral hierarchy. The first and greatest ancestor and ancestors, of course, being Amen and Amenet. And we're going to have, of course, a show dedicated specifically to Amen and Amenet, and going into detail about that. Of course, we already have an article dealing with that, video dealing with that, examining the article and other information. And we will get into more details about that as well. So we just want to show, when we talk about ancestral religion, it's not only because it's transmitted to us ancestrally from our people, from our blood circle, but it defines our practice. We live in harmony with our great ancestor, or great ancestress, which is Amen and Amenet. We are not talking about here this foolish notion of a deified ancestor, meaning somebody who was a great man, somebody who was a great woman, who did great things for the nation, and then when they died, people venerated them, poured libation to them, honored them, and then they took on the characteristics of a more powerful spiritual entity and became known as a quote-unquote deified ancestor or deified ancestress, and then later people began calling them gods and so forth, and then in reality, Amen and Amenet were originally just a great ancestor, male and female, who walked the first in the clan, and later they became known as the supreme being. That is totally inaccurate. That is foolishness, that's fabrication from the whites and their offspring. Number one, they're deliberately lying about our culture. And then Negroes who follow that nonsense, they will go search the written traditions, written typically by white anthropologists, but then also repeated by Negrified, misinformed, continental Afurakani, Afurakaini people who are repeating the nonsense of the whites and their offspring, and they will repeat the false cosmology promoted by the whites and their offspring, fabricated by the whites and their offspring, and teach it as though it is ancestral culture. The supreme being was never originally just a man and a woman who later became a deified ancestor. That's never been accurate. Anybody who has any currency with actual ancestral religion knows that. So anybody who teaches that, you know that they have no knowledge whatsoever of ancestral religion, because we communicate with our ancestresses and ancestors. They possess us. They communicate via divination and various other means, which we will get into. We communicate with the Abosong. They possess us. They show themselves to us, to adults as well as children. Communicate in various ways, and we know the differences between a deity and an ancestral spirit. We also know the difference between a deity, an ancestral spirit, and the supreme being, the great father and the great mother, because they have a different kind of energy and a different kind of communication. And they communicate directly with us as well. It's not a mystery. They're not the unknown and so forth. And not the great mystery to the extent that we can never comprehend or communicate with the supreme being. That's totally inaccurate. That comes from the whites and their offspring. It doesn't come from our culture. We communicate with Amen, communicate with Amenet. You have people who are the first prophets, quote-unquote, of Amen, the God, the wife of Amen, and all these different titles in ancient Kemet. In our Khan culture, you have, you know, the priest that's dealing with the Nyame Dria, which is a shrine to Nyame in the midst of the city and the dwelling, a shrine which is like a pole, looks like a tree. That's why they call it Nyame Dria or Nyame's tree. And it's like a three-pronged at the top of the long tree-looking staff, three-pronged arm holding a vessel which contains water that's purified, that's used to purify the people. And it's a shrine for Nyame. We know who Nyame or Amen is. We deal directly with Amen, Nyame. We deal directly with Amenet, Nyamewa, Amen, and Nyamewa, Nyame, Nyamewa, Amen, Amenet show themselves to us. They communicate to us. They are the supreme being. And then, of course, when they talk about deified ancestresses and ancestors, they're talking about who we call Nananom, Samanfo, which is a class of ancestral spirits which are different from the Abosom, and the Abosom, of course, are different from the Supreme Being. So this is why we deal with actual, ancient, authentic Akan ancestral religion and authentic ancestral religion to separate reality from the whites and their offspring, of course, who are our absolute enemies, who are always going to lie about the culture, but they're misinformed individuals in our own community who repeat those lies. Some of them because they've just been reading nonsense and memorizing the nonsense or getting degrees in the nonsense of anthropology and pseudo-religion and things like that. Or those who travel to the continent or connect with people from the continent and connect with the misinformed, infected elders who have been infected with white culture, infected with Christianity, infected with Islam, infected with Judaism for a couple of hundred years. And they've been passing on that infection for a couple of hundred years. And now they pass that infection on as though it's traditional culture. And when our people go to them, they believe that they're receiving something authentic, which it is not. It's just white culture, white pseudo-cosmology parading as ancestral religion. And so these individuals are misinforming our people, most of them unknowingly. Then you have a few, of course, who are our enemies who work along with the white diaspora. So when we talk about ancestral, and Amen and Amenet being the greatest ancestor and ancestress, this is not talking about a human male or human female. The Abosom are not human beings. They never were. They never will be. That's a different class of being. Just like there's a difference between a male human being and female human being and a male animal and a female animal. These are different classes of being. There's never a time that we evolved from an animal to a human being, even though the white offspring teach that and Negroes repeat it because they want to believe what the white offspring said. Not because the white offspring have proven that, of course, which they can't, but because Negroes have low self-esteem and they are still enamored with the whites and their offspring. So they will fight tooth and nail to support a theory put forward by the whites and their offspring, which can't be proven, of course. But our own ancestresses and ancestors who built these great civilizations and understood and laid out cosmology and tell us exactly where we come from, they can't have that. They have to have what the whites and their offspring say, all the while claiming to be embracing ancestral culture. So that's when we're talking about, we want to clear that up about ancestry, talking about ancestral religion. So now that we clear up with what we're actually talking about, let's get into the term in Akanfo Nanasom, ancient authentic Akan ancestry religion, the term Nsamanfo. What does that actually mean? And why the ancestresses and ancestors, the Nsamanfo, and the Nananom Nsamanfo are central to our development. We can already see now, because we showed that hierarchy, how we all work together. There's no separation. There's no such thing as, well, all I need to do is, you know, communicate with the Supreme Being. I don't need any intermediaries. I don't need to talk to the ancestresses and ancestors. I don't need to deal with any Abosom. All I need to do is talk to the Supreme Being. That's like one of the cells in your body saying, I don't need to connect with or be nourished by any organ. I'm going directly to the great body itself. I don't need any go-betweens. Of course, that's idiotic because the cell is actually a child of the organ and nourished continuously by the blood and the nutrients that's in the blood that's in the organ. It's constantly circulating through the organ. And the energy, oxygen that's in the blood is circulating through the organ and so forth. And the water that's in the organ is like the ancestral realm. So when a cell dies, part of the water that made up the cell rejoins with the water that's part of the organ. Of course, the human body is primarily water, over 70% water. That includes the organs that are bathed in water. So when a cell dies, the water that was in that little cell rejoins with the water that's in the organ itself. That watery substance is like the ancestral realm in the body. And when the cell dies, it rejoins that nourishing and rejuvenating water of the quote-unquote ancestral realm in the body. When the cell is going to be reborn, some of that energy is going to be reborn into a new cell, and some of the water is taken from the quote-unquote ancestral realm of the water of the body and becomes a part of the new cell. Now you have a new cell being reborn and the water being reborn into that new cell, and it's living within an organ or an organ system. It's connected to the water that's in the organ system, which is the ancestral realm. It's connected to the organ itself, and of course the blood that's flowing through the organ and the nutrients in the blood that's flowing through the organ. And of course that organ is, of course, is a portion of the greater body. There's a hierarchy there. The cell, the water, the organ, the body. The cell can't say, I'm not going to connect with any water at all. I'm not going to connect with this organ at all. I'm going directly to the body. That's an ignorance of physical anatomy. And then, of course, if you're talking about spirituality and somebody saying that, They're just demonstrating their ignorance of spiritual anatomy. And again, that comes from the achiwadyepo, the spirits of disorder. We've been given a false picture of what our relationship to the supreme being is, but now that we have a real understanding, we can move forward. So you already have a hint or a basic picture of why the ancestresses and ancestors, the nsamanfo, are critical to our development, just like the water in your body is critical to the replenishment, nourishment, and rejuvenation of every single cell. So let's look at the term. We're going to look at our article, the origin of the term nsamanfo in Khmer. For the people who just came in, you can go to our link. We put a link in the chat room, the Akanfo Nanasom page on our website, odirafo.com, odwirafo.com. If you go to the Akanfo Nanasom page, you'll find this article and the various other articles. So we start off talking about, first of all, as we said last week, the Akan people migrated from ancient Kanak, which is the title of Nubia. Some migrated up into an established ancient Kemet. Some went further up into the Levant and established Kanana, which became known as Canaan, corrupted into Canaan, into Sumer, Akkad, or the Akkadah culture, and so forth. But those on the continent, we migrated west, reestablished ancient Ghana, Akana, the Ghana Empire, over a couple thousand years ago. Then about 1,000 years ago, some of us migrated from that region, migrated towards the Savannah and Forest Belt regions, reestablished Akana civilization or Akan civilization in the regions of today's Ghana and Ivory Coast, and then some of us were taken from that region and brought to the Western Hemisphere a few hundred years ago. So we show the connection, the migratory patterns. We showed last week the genetic continuity from ancient Kemet to us here in America through West Africa, Africa, and so forth. What we're showing here is the origin of the term Nsamai, which is the term for ancestral spirit. In our Akan culture, we show that exact same term exists in the language of ancient Kemet, meaning the same thing, and it's properly defined. So we can show, where does this term come from when we say Nsamanfo, the root is Samai? Where does Samai come from? The N is a prefix. Sometimes it's Nsamanfo or Asamanfo, meaning plural. Fo means plural as in a group. So Samai is an ancestral spirit. Samanfo or Nsamanfo are the group fo of ancestral spirits, Asamain or Nsamai. So Nsamanfo is a group of ancestral spirits. Asamain is an ancestral spirit individual. So where does this term come from? We talk about ancient Kemet, Egypt, ancient Kanet, Nubia, riverine cultures. When we show imagery of that, you see the sun, for example, the Aten, the sun, and Ra setting inside of the sun, sitting inside of the sun. Ra operates through the sun. He is not the Aten. The sun is called Aten and Atenit in ancient Kemet. Ra, the creator, Raet, the creatress, operates through the sun. They are not the sun. The sun is a physical transmitter of the spiritual energy of Ra and Raet. So you'll see Ra sitting inside of the sun, showing that the energy that penetrates and illuminates that orb. Sitting inside of a boat, however, when the sun is sailing across the sky in the boat, the sky is seen as a mass of moisture, mass of water, and the hot, fiery disk is sitting in a boat and sailing across the water from the east to the west. That's important because the sun rises in the Aftet, the east, the sun sets in the west. When it sets in the west and the sun sets and it becomes dark and then the sun dips down and goes into the ground and goes into the quote-unquote underworld, that is akin to us. As Afurakani Afurakaiti people, we are children of the Oriya, Oriya Ma, children of the sun. We refer to ourselves as that across the continent in various languages. When the sun sets, that's like the sunset of our life. When the sun rises, that's like our birth. So when we're born, that's a sun is rising. when the sun is at its peak at noon, that's like the peak of our lives, the height of our activity. When the sun begins to set, that is the sunset of our lives, when we begin to reach elderhood, elderishood, become nananum mpanyimpo, cultivated elders, spiritually cultivated elders and elderesses, and then we begin to crystallize in that maturity. And when we reach that crystallization process, that's when we have made our transition. We have died, and our body doesn't deteriorate per se. It crystallizes. And then, of course, in our practices, we mummify. That body is mummified into a crystal, basically. And now that body itself is a crystalline form, which becomes the best ancestral shrine for the spirit that doesn't disembark from that vessel. So when the sun sets, that's akin to the person setting or dying. So in ancient Kemet, it's a riverine culture. Everything is dependent on the river. It rarely rained in Kemet. So the river flooding every year and flooding both banks of the river and depositing rich black silt, palm ore, the gray black, on the banks of the river. And once the floodwaters would recede after a number of months, then people can go plant their crops in that rich black soil, and that would make that would ensure that crops in abundance would develop over the next few months, and the people would be able to feed themselves and have surpluses and everything else for the rest of the year. So it's a riverine culture. It's spoken those terms. They utilize that symbolism. They can look in the natural world, of course, and see that symbolism playing out. So it wasn't just abstract. It's a functional symbolism. It's real. So when the sun sets in the west and goes into the ground, when we make our transition, then we bury our bodies into the ground. In ancient Kemet, when a boat would arrive in port, when it would make it arrive to its final destination, it would arrive in port, then the boat would be tied to a mooring post so it wouldn't be able to float away again. And then once it arrived in port and was tied, reached its final destination, then the inhabitants of the boat would disembark from the vessel. When the sun would set in its solar boat in the evening and then it gets dark and everything, quote unquote, dies, the sun would go into the ground. That means the sun, the Aten, would disembark from that solar vessel and go in the underground. Then there was a night boat that the sun would travel in. Ra, instead of being in the form of a hawk-headed divinity, as he is when he's sailing across the sky during the day, then he takes on, as an aerial bird divinity, then he takes on the form of a flat-horned ram divinity, a land animal, in the 12 hours of the night. So when the boat is sailing underground in the underground river in the 12 hours of the night, Ra has taken the form of Apu Ra. Apu meaning flesh, and he's in the form of a land animal. And for the 12 hours of the night, he's in the underworld sailing from the west back to the east. And then once he reaches the east, then he disembarks from the night boat, gets back in the solar boat and goes back up into the sky and takes on that form of the falcon, the aerial animal, and sails through the sky in the sun boat. But when the sun sets and it goes into the ground, it disembarks from the vessel. That's the same as us when we make our transition. The body is moored or tied or fastened to the ground, meaning buried, and the spirit disembarks from the vessel. Now, that's key because in ancient Kemet, the term spelled M-N, also M-N-A, Mina, Mini, Mina, Min, means to arrive in port, and we show that in the article. It also means to die, so, and death. So what you'll see is Min, Mina, Minu is that term, and then the determinative is a boat. That's one version of it. It means to arrive in port. To die, because when the boat reaches its final destination, it has arrived in port, but it's also saying the same thing as to die. So one spelling of it is a symbol for the letter M, symbol for the letter N, Min, symbol for the letter A, Mina, or Mini, meaning to arrive in port, and the determinative symbol of a boat showing this many, meaning, or men, meaning to die, to arrive in port, is talking about a boat. Then another version of it is the symbol for the combination MN, the symbol for the letter N, and the determinative symbol here, instead of a boat, showing the boat is arriving in port, is actually the figure of a mummified body laying flat. So one men or mina or many, meaning to die, is a boat, meaning to arrive in port. The other many or mina is, or men, meaning to arrive in port, to die, and the determinative symbol is a mummified body laying flat on its back. And the third version of to arrive in port or to die is simply the mummified body laying on its back. So in ancient Kemet, when somebody says somebody died, instead of saying, hey, the person died, they would say he's arrived in port. Just like people here in our community say, well, so-and-so has gone home. Or, you know, sometimes they say that at funerals, he's gone home. Or they'll say, we'll say, well, so-and-so has made his transition. We're talking about the same thing. We're using different kinds of terminology to indicate that the person has made their transition, has died. In ancient Kemet, they would say, he has arrived in port. It was a riverine culture, and they were used to living and having boats arriving in port, the boats being tied, the physical vessel being tied and fastened for good, and the inhabitants of that vessel disembarking and leaving the vessel. And they saw that, of course, play out when somebody died. The body would be fastened to the ground through burial, and then they would see the inhabitant of the body, the vessel, disembark, the spirit would leave the body. So they would say, so-and-so has arrived in port, meaning he has died. Men, mina. Now, and we go into that, we go into some of the etymology of that and various forms of that terminology in the next couple of pages in the article. We also mentioned in the text, the Book of the Heavenly Cow from the tombs of Tutankhamen and Seti and Ramesu. One of the quotes, it says, then Ra spoke, listen to these men and women who are created by my eye. The right eye of Ra is the sun, and the left eye of Ra is the moon. So when he's talking about created by my eye, men and women being created by the eye of Ra, meaning the right eye of Ra, the sun, meaning we are not only Mesura, we're also children of the sun. That's what they're saying. So that we mentioned that quote just to show that. So even when we use in our obituaries in America, like in the Bakongo tradition, they talk about people are living sun, and their birth is like the rising sun, and when they die, that's the setting of the sun. Even in America today, when people have funerals, even though we've been corrupted by Christianity, when you look in the funerals and obituaries, they will say sunset of life. They talk about when the person is born, then they'll say the sunset or the sunrise of life is when the person is born. The sunset of their life is the day the person made their transition to die. So we still have that symbolism. We still held on to that, and it still shows up in various ways in wherever we are in the world. So we talk about us being children of the sun and arriving in port. So that term men, many, or men, meaning to die, death, dead, and so forth. In ancient Kemet, there's a term or letter phrase, the S symbol. The symbol for the letter S, the medu for the letter S, there's a vertical S as well as a horizontal S. Sometimes they'll say that's a Z, but it's the S sound, and they're used interchangeably. The S is what they call a causative. So when you add the S to a word, it's causing something to happen. So, for example, you have men to die or death, dead. Then you put the S in front of the men, semen or semi. It means to die or to make dead, to cause something to be dead, to become dead, and so forth. You have the term, for example, fek or fek, which means loose, loose or loose, like something that has been loosed. When you put the S in front of it, sefik or sefek, it means to make loose, to unloosen, to unravel. So first, it's something, it's a descriptive, something that is loose, fek or fek. put the S in front of it, sefik, meaning to loosen, to unravel. Men is a descriptive, dead, to die, dead, and so forth. When you put the S in front of it, semen, S-M-N, or semine, it means to make dead, to become dead, and so forth. So when you look at the term in Kemet, semine, the root is mine or men, which means dead or death, and so forth. Semen means to retire, to withdraw, rest. It is the active or causative version, semen, of the term men. So you'll see that we show that. And we mentioned that, so we say the medusa, the letter S, is often used in the language of Kemet as a causative. It is a is prefixed to a word to indicate that something is being made, caused to happen. The term men means to die, while men, menit, means dead one. The causative, semen, means to become dead. Conceptually references the individual who is withdrawn from the physical world, retired from the physical world, gone to the land of rest, to the Ament, the hidden land, the west, the land where the sun sets, gone to the spirit realm. So, and it also shows the determinative of two legs walking, which is the two legs are returning to the spirit realm in this term. So that's Semen, S-M-N, in ancient Kemet, talking about to die, to make dead, to become dead, to happen, to make that happen. That's very important because one of the terms, men, is a colossal statue of a god or a king, but it's talking about a deceased person. It shows a mummified person, a mummified individual, a crystallized or mummified image. The word related to that is semenu, S-M-N-U, in reality, semenu, which means an image or a figure, and it's talking about a memorial figure, a funerary figure, a mummified figure. Semenu, S-M-N, semenu, and you'll see, we show on the term men is also pronounced in Coptic as mine, so therefore in the Coptic dialect, the late Kemet dialect, semenu would be semenu or semine, meaning one who has become dead. That, of course, is semine in the Akan language, means the deceased entity, deceased individual. So we show that etymology in Kemet to show exactly what it means, where it comes from, how it came into being, the cosmology that supports it, the sun setting in the west, in the Ament, in the Amait, the Manu, the west, the spirit disembarking from the vessel, the vessel being tied or fastened or men, menu, moored, so to speak. It's like the body being tied to the ground. It becomes mine, semine, to retire, to west, to withdraw. And the spirit withdraws, retires from the world, rests from the world, and goes into the spirit realm. It's called semine, semine-nu in ancient Kemet. And it continued to be called semine, in our kind of descriptive title of a deceased spirit. So we go into that detail there. And then we also show Samanite in ancient Kemet becomes Samine Da in Akan, which is the ancestral realm, the land or the space or the region, Da, of the Samine, Asamine Da, which is Samine To in ancient Kemet, meaning the cemetery, the necropolis, the land of the dead, the hill of the spirit bodies, and so forth. We show all of that. So Asamine, Asamine Fo, the group Samine, or Fo of the Samine, the ancestral spirit, the deceased spirit. Asamine Da, meaning the region Da, or the place Da of the Samine, becomes Samine Ta, or Samine Tet in ancient Kemet, which is the land of the dead, or the region of the dead, the necropolis, and so forth, the realm of the dead, and the tomb, and so forth. So all those definitions are proven, the exact same terms. We use one of the descriptive terms in Kemet for the deceased. We continue to use it in our Akan culture today, and we have the exact meaning. So we show all of that. Now, there's another key. Some spirits who, for various reasons, as we say in the article, do not make a smooth transition two or settle harmoniously within the ancestral realm. Atamando, upon death, such discarnate spirits thus remain earthbound. Some are found to be lingering around the place where they died or were killed. We talked about that last week. Somebody gets shot. Their spirit is still hanging around the space where they got shot. People who are clairvoyant, clairsentient, and so forth, they can see that spirit still around the spot. We spoke to an individual today who was down in Ferguson, somebody who's involved in ancestral religion. They went over to where Mike Brown was killed, and they could still feel his spirit in the area where they left the basically left an ancestral shrine for him right there on the street. His blood is still soaking the street right now. So, and people who are clairvoyant can see those spirits and communicate with them and help them move along. And very often children can see, if somebody move into a house where an individual had died in the house, children and sometimes adults can see that spirit still hanging around the house and showing up, sometimes see them out the corner of their eye, sometimes see them full body, face, you know, a frontal image. So some spirits remain earthbound because they are so controlled by anxiety that magnetism to this realm still holds them here because they haven't made a smooth transition and they're full of anxiety and they're still causing anxiety and negative energy for other people who are still living in the world. We say some attempt to harass or haunt the living members of their family and, or other people who are spiritually receptive. These spirits, often translated as bad spirits, are called Sasa or Sesa in Akan. Sesa is defined as loose, disorderly, deranged. This defines the behavior of the spirits of those who have died yet have not become grounded in Asamando amongst the community of Samantha. They are often wayward, aimless, unstable, and discordant. We show the difference between the Sesa or Sasa and the Sa mind. Remember, the mind or men, Mina, means one who has arrived in port. When the boat arrives in port, it is bound, it is tied up to a mooring post, or it's more, it comes from the term mer, meta, medi, which means boats or ships, shipping that has arrived in port, and the meta post is the mora post, and the muri post, the mune post, the moor, mooring post. So it's that it ties, you know, the boat and fastens it so it can't move anywhere. Because you don't want to get off the boat and leave it, and then the currents of the water carry the boat right out into the water and it crashes into something or it disappears. When you get off the boat, you tie it, you moor it, or you tie it, you fasten it. Now it can't move. So it's not wayward, it's not slipping around, it's not floating around, it's tied, it's bound, it's fastened, it's permanent. This is why if a person is referred to as moored, like a mooring post, tied or fastened, bound, this is one of the terms for a slave, a vassal, a mer in ancient Kemet, moor in English and the European languages, someone who is tied, who is bound, who is fastened. They're a vassal, they're a slave, they're a servant. That's a pejorative title for somebody who's living and they're bound. If you die, and yes, you want your body to be bound or fastened to the ground as an ancestral shrine, and then your spirit disembarks from that vessel. If you're alive and you're bound, that's not a good thing. You shouldn't be bound to anything. So the term for a slave or a servant or a vassal is mer, meaning one who is bound to their lot in life, a bondsman, vassal, slave, and so forth, wretched and afflicted, and so forth. And this is where the term moor comes from. Of course, we have the book. Moor means dead, where we go into detail about that and demonstrate conclusively that this is where the term moor comes from. It is not a title of, you know, nobility. It means dead mentally, dead physically, servant, slave, vassal, inflicted, wretched. It's always been a pejorative term if it's applied to someone, a living person, someone who's bound. So, and of course our book goes into that. And that's one of the books people will receive if they, again, if they order 5, we will give them the whole 10 if you order between today and tomorrow. So we'll get back into that as well. But we're showing that men, meaning the dead one, the mummified one, the one who's been crystallized, one who has arrived in port and has been fastened. Shamayin is the one that has been caused to be mine, to have become dead, to have withdrawn, as we said. But the men or mine portion is the one that has been mummified, fastened, and bound. So Shamayin is the deceased spirit that's fastened. If you have the Sa without the mind, without the binding, without the being permanent, binding, and bound to one place, now you have the Sa or the Sasa, Sesa, the loose one, loose one, disorderly one, deranged one that's not in one place but just floating around. That's why we call the disordered spirits the Sesa or Sesa, meaning the loose, disorderly ones that are just floating around because they're not grounded or fastened, and they don't have a firm place in the ancestral realm. They're just hanging around, causing problems and haunting people and everything else. All right, so we go into the details about that in that section, showing the difference between now different classes or states of being in the ancestral realm. When you die, you can either go to the ancestral realm and live with the other ancestresses and ancestors in Asamando, the ancestral realm. And, of course, in our Akan culture, they say if you want to know what the ancestral realm of Asamando is like, consider the dream state, because when you're dreaming, you're in a dark room. There's no sound, no light, no movement. Your body is laying still. But, of course, you see luminous images. You're hearing individuals, communicating with individuals in your dream state. Your eyes are closed. There's no light in the room, but you're experiencing luminous images and sounds and everything else, because that's your spirit interacting with other spirits, typically. Of course, sometimes you can just have a dream where you're just remembering things from the past, but even in that event, you're still generating luminous forms that you can see in the darkness. But very often you're communicating with ancestral spirits in your dreams. Same thing in the after-death state. Your spirit leaves your body. The body is in a dark, unlit place with no light, no movement, no sound, but the spirit is interacting with other spirits. Just like you can interact with your ancestors and ancestors in the dream state, when you make your transition, you will live in their community. If you haven't made that smooth transition, you're still magnetically drawn to Earth where every other living people are, because you didn't move on to the ancestral realm, then you'll hang around the spot where you died, where you were killed and so forth, causing other people problems, and you're just hanging out. Those are two different states of being. One of the reasons we have funerary practices is to help move those kinds of spirits onto the ancestral realm so they don't cause a bunch of problems for people on a daily basis. Illnesses, miscarriages, anxiety, depression, anger, fighting between spouses, people being abusive towards their children and everything else, people having strong inclinations to engage in drug use, marijuana. A lot of these people smoke marijuana and try to say that it's natural from the earth, are just being influenced by negative, discarnate spirits. Some of them are just disordered themselves, but other ones are being influenced, and they come up with foolish rationalizations because they open themselves up to discarnate, ignorant spirits who are constantly promoting these false rationalizations for you to engage in lustful activity, self-destructive activity. So drug use, bad money management, all kinds of things, criminality, people being influenced to a certain degree. Now, you don't have to follow influences, but if you're influenced and you don't know that these inclinations are coming from other entities, you just think because it's, in your head, it must be your own thoughts, then very often you move on that. So these are different states of being and funerary practices that are proper help to move the ancestral spirit, the discarnate spirit, onto the ancestral realm, remove all this backlog of wayward spirits hanging around that are plaguing people and tormenting young kids in their dreams, children in their dreams, and tormenting older people, and people are, feeling depressed, anxious, schizophrenic, and going to psychiatrists and getting medication and all kinds of nonsense. That can be easily remedied by dealing with the ancestral spirits that are just hanging out. So, different states of being from one to the other, the Sasa and the Sama. So we go into that in that portion of the article. We talk about those other terms. The final piece in this particular article, the structure of the spiritual form of the samadhi. So a spirit itself in the Icon tradition is called sum sum. The root is su, and we talked about that last week. The term su in Icon, it means a couple of things. Osu or insu means water, and su. And remember, we're over 70% water. But then su also means nature, a central nature. Then su, bind, B-A-N, S-U-B-A-N. Bind means a form or a fence or a structure around something. So the bind, the structure around the su, your essential nature, subine, this is why we use the term subine for character in our con, because it's the albine, the structure around your essential nature, su, is your character, your behavior. So when you engage in certain kinds of behavior, they'll say, well, he has good character. Subine pa. Pa means good. Subine, so good subine. Subine pa meaning good character, or subine bon, or bani meaning evil, disorder. Subine bani means evil character. What is character? It is the form, bind, around your essential nature, su. So subine means character. But that root is su, your essential nature. Essential dispositions, character, that which distinguishes you from other entities. That term is double su and sum, which is the spirit body, that spiritual form that you reside in. So sum sum is just the word for spirit in our Icon culture. So you're a sum sum that animates the physical body. Your physical body we call honam, the physical body, also called onipadria, because it's like an odria, a tree, but with vessels and veins and everything moving back and forth. But honam, ehum means self, and nam means flesh, like your literal flesh. In Icon, and just like in Kemet, Enam means flesh in Kemet, Enam means flesh in Icon. Of course, it's the same language. Honam means ho-e-hon, the self, Enam, flesh, so Honam means the flesh, self, or the physical body. So your physical body, your Honam, is animated by a spirit body, which is your sun-sun. So while you're alive, your spirit is operating through your honam. Your sum sum is operating through your honam. Your spirit is operating through your physical body. Die, your spirit, sum sum, separates from the physical body. Again, the physical body is mummified. It is fastened, menu, to the ground. Moored to the ground, fastened and tied to the ground. And your spirit, sum sum, disembarks from that vessel, just like the spirits in the solar boat of Yaten disembark from the vessel when the sun goes into the ground. However, your physical body projects an electromagnetic form. It was projecting that form all throughout your life. Everything has a magnetosphere, a magnetic field, just like the earth has a magnetosphere. Your physical body has a magnetosphere, the energy circulating through your physical body. It's because you're made up of, you know, atoms, protons, neutrons, and electrons, and the, you know, electrons orbiting the protons and neutrons, creating a magnetic field. And because you're made up of a number of those, of course, it's just the energy moving through that specific form that you have generates an electromagnetic body all throughout your life. When your body dies, your body is buried in the ground, it still generates that electromagnetic form. Your spirit, your sum sum, still takes up residence in that electromagnetic form and keeps that electromagnetic form together. Because your spirit is energy, and it keeps that electromagnetic form that was projected from your physical body all of your life. Your spirit inhabits that, and that electromagnetic form is the form that people can actually see. That is the samadhi, which in English is translated typically as a ghost. But now we have a proper definition. the Samain is that electromagnetic form that your physical body projects, and your Tsum Tsum takes up residence in it. So it's the physical form of you. When people see the spirit walking around, they say, oh, that's so-and-so. And it's no different than, it's absolutely no different than the interplay of light and dark matter in reality. So when you have a mirror, and of course light interacts with that mirror, there's a reflection. The same thing with water. There's a reflection, an actual reflection, a replica of your physical form. Obviously, it's not your physical form, because your physical form is here and the mirror is over here, and it's a reflection of light, and it reproduces your physical form. In the same fashion, an electromagnetic body, just like that mirror image, is really an electromagnetic body. That's all it is. The image you see when you look into water and you see your reflection, it's just electromagnetic energy that replicates your form. It's the same thing with the Samain. It's the electromagnetic form that's replicated from the body, projected from the body. Your Tsum Tsum takes up residence in that, animates it, and lives in it, and that is the Samain. That's the quote-unquote ghost body. That's what people see. So when they see a person walking around, they don't typically say, I just saw a Tsum Tsum or a spirit walking around. They say, I saw a Samain, one of the Samain, that deceased person's spirit. So that's what we're looking at. So that's the last part of the article goes into detail about that. That's the difference. We wanted to define the differences between your essential nature, Subhine character, Tsum Tsum, your actual spirit, and the electromagnetic body that emanates from the physical body, which is your Samain, which in English would be called a ghost. But as you can see, the term ghost doesn't fully encapsulate what's actually happening. And there are not enough English words that are connected to give those proper definitions. But in our traditional languages, they're all there. Give me 1 second. I need to plug in the computer right quick. Okay, so when you look at our page 8, we go into detail about that at the latter part of page 8. So this is why we say the Samain or Samain is the form that the individual takes after the Tsum Tsum spirit leaves the body. The closest English equivalent to the term Samain or Samain is ghost. Your Tsum Tsum, your spirit, is invisible. Anasatya Apua, Earth Mother, your spirit operates through a physical body. The physical body is the seen form within which the unseen Tsum Tsum or spirit dwells. When you die and the spirit and the Tsum Tsum separates from the body, the Tsum Tsum retains the spirit body form, the Samain. That's an electromagnetic form. This is the spirit body form that some people can see clairvoyantly, as well as the form that the spirits take when they visit us in dreams. This form is the bind or the mind, the image, the shape, the figure that is referred to in English as a ghost. It is the radiant form of the physical body retained by the Tsum Tsum and within which the Tsum Tsum now dwells, or the spirit now dwells, dwelling in that radiant electromagnetic body. To give further detail, our physical bodies constantly radiate energy. This energy not only generates an aura, but a subtle form of the physical body, similar to the exact replica or mirror image of yourself, born of the interplay of light and darkness that you see when you look into a river. It is this subtle form that is retained by the magnetism of the Tsum Tsum spirit after the death of the physical body. The Tsum Tsum can thus continue to manifest in this form in the spirit realm and upon Asatya for the Earth Mother, as a quote-unquote ghost. It is important to note that in Kemet, statues themselves were often called the shadow spirits, Shut, of the individual, for they were typically mirror images or reflections of the individual. We go into detail about that there. And the final piece there, let's see, I just want to make sure we didn't miss anything. So just quickly, the final piece there as far as this definition of the Samayan, the ancestral spirit, is nature and structure. When the boat of the Aten arrives in the Amet West at sunset, the boat or vessel has arrived in port and docks. The spirits leave the day boat. They then board the night boat for the journey in the underworld. In the same fashion, the Afurakai Afurakai, or African individual, as a sumsum, a spirit, operates through a physical vessel, body. Upon the transition of death, the sumsum leaves the physical vessel and operates through the non-physical form or vessel as a samai. It is this luminous spirit body form or vessel that we take on as ancestral spirits, and is also the luminous form that we take on when entering and interacting in the dream world. Because the sumsum operates through the sumai, meaning because the spirit operates through that radiant electromagnetic body, when we see the samai, quote-unquote ghost vessel, we see the individual. The same is true in the physical world. Because the sumsum operates through the physical body, when we see the physical body, we see the individual and identify him or her in relation to his or her physical body. And it's the same in the after-death state. The sumsum or spirit is animating that radiant electromagnetic body. So when we see that electromagnetic body, that samai, the sumsum is inside of it animating it, so we identify the person by identifying that body. And they still have the same features, facial features, and everything else, just like the reflection in the river or the reflection in the mirror, which is a reflection of your physical body, but it's not your physical body, obviously, has the same features and everything else that you have. So that's the structure of the samai, the ancestral spirit body, and so forth. So let's do a couple of things. I'm going to check the chat room right quick, and then we're going to look into some questions. Let's see. Okay. You're reading an article speaking about the Jimawoji, Adebowoji, or Adebowoi, and they, which they define as God created gods. What would be the accurate meaning of this term? That depends on who's speaking and what they're talking about. That term Jimawoji is, even though some in Akan tradition have used that term, both from Jimawoji and so forth, but that's not an Akan term. That's a term from a culture on the continent that's not Akan, but some of them had incorporated that non-Akan culture into the quote-unquote Akan tradition in America, so they're utilizing that term. So when you deal with these different people, depending on what they are talking about, then you'll find out what the terminology means. Very often, like we were saying before, people will misclassify deceased ancestral spirits or subjectively deified, and we say subjectively deified ancestral spirits, meaning they begin to honor certain people very highly and start referring to them as abosom. They are simply deceased ancestral spirits. Some people will refer to them as abosom because they're discarnate spirits and they do things for people and help people heal or help people find things or help people do this or do that. Because their spirits helping people in the physical world is similar to the way abosom operate, and they'll say, well, they'll start referring to them as abosom, or if they're phone heavy, they'll say, well, the Vodou just did this for me, and they know it's an ancestral spirit, but they refer to them as a deity anyway, and include them in the company of the divinities, even though they are not Vodou, and not abosom, and not Orisha, and so forth. So they subjectively deify, quote-unquote, we put that in quotes, deify, are they really deified? No, they're not. But people utilize that terminology, and they do that. In a similar way, we'll call people brother and sister all day, and we know they're not really our brothers and sisters biologically, but we still use that terminology because it's symbolic, and we know what we're talking about. Right, and that's a Ga term. And the Ga are connected geographically, the Akan people. Some of them intermarried and things like that, but the Ga culture is a different culture than the Akan culture. They migrated from further east in the regions of what is, you know, Togo, Benin, Nigeria, and so forth. They migrated into the region of where Ghana is now. They took up residence there. They came in contact, and the Akan and the Ga came in contact in that region. In different areas, there were wars between the two. Sometimes there was cultural assimilation. Some of the Ga, for example, were at war with the Akwamu Akan people. The Ga lost those wars to a certain extent. They incorporated a lot of Akan culture and symbolism and so forth. So you'll see overlapping things. But Jim Awoji is Ga culture, even, and no matter what culture you look into, whether it's Akan, Yoruba, whatever it is, you'll see influences from the Whites and Offspring talking about deified ancestors, deified ancestresses, and some people engaging that process subjectively. The people themselves on the ground, they know the difference between if somebody is an actual deity and if they're not, whether they use the terminology and calling them a deity or not. Some people will lie to try to take money from you and say that a certain spirit is a deity, and they're really just their deceased grandmother and aunt or uncle or something like that. And you have other people who are misinformed. So you'll find that across the board. But the bottom line is, when you know the difference, as we went through this spiritual anatomy of the Samhain and what it's talking about, a human being who lived as a human being, they died, they arrived in port, their spirit disembarked from the vessel. There's a reason why they're called Samhain. We go into detail about that. It has nothing to do with being a deity. They don't grow into a deity. They don't grow into a different class of being. The most that we will grow into is what we are naturally designed to grow into, which we will grow into or crystallize into, not just one of the Nsamanfo ancestresses and ancestors, but one of the Nananom Nsamanfo, the spiritually cultivated or honored ancestresses and ancestors. That's the height of human development. There's a role in creation for human beings. There's a role in creation for animals. There's a role in creation for Abosom deities. There's a reason for that. There's a reason for classification. People who have a low sense of self-esteem, they hate themselves because of the Whites and their offspring. Not only do they not want to be black and want to identify, many people want to bleach their skin and, you know, their hair and cut their noses off and everything else. But even the ones who've gotten away from that, but they still have that deeply seated sense of self-hatred inculcated within them by the Whites and their offspring, they'll claim that they're cultural, but they still have that self-hatred. So when their own ancestral culture teaches them that they are human beings and the difference between that and deities, they say, oh, no, 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 I'm a god. I am God. I'm the god. They can't, in their minds, they can't lower themselves to being a human being because that's not good enough. They have to be a god. They have to be, you know, quote-unquote divine and so forth because they don't understand cosmology. They don't know what a kra-ka-ka-it is. Because crackers didn't teach them what that is. They've misinformed them, and they still have that self-hatred. So they can't, you know, settle, quote-unquote, for being merely a human, which they know they are. So schizophrenically, they have to say, no, I'm not a human being. I'm a deity. I'm just a god having a human experience. That kind of insanity comes directly from the Whites and their offspring. It's a casualty of cultural warfare. So, but when you are given the proper structure of what a deceased human being, what happens when we die, why we're called Nsamhain, what's the difference between us and the divinities, then you know who you are and you understand the value when you understand your spiritual anatomy of being a human being. As if we have to actually explain to people now that it's okay to be a human being. You don't have to be a god, not that you ever were anyway, and you shouldn't even have a desire to be a god. That's like an animal, like a dog or a cat saying, I'm not a cat, talking to other cats saying, I'm not a cat, I'm a human. I'm just a human having a cat experience. I'm not a cat. I don't know about the rest of y'all, but I'm not a cat. I'm a human. That's idiotic. It's insane. And that's the same thing that we are doing, trying to be a different class of being as though there's no value in being a human being. But the whites and offspring taught us that, you know, first they tried to teach us that black is inferior and everything else and white people first. Once we got the information, of course, that black people started everything and we are the original and only human being, now they've convinced us that being a human being is not enough. That's inferior. Unless you're a god, you're nobody. So this is the kind of nonsense that goes on. So, and so that goes to the next question. Also in regards to the misinformation of the statement, gods are immortal men. Men are immortal gods, supposedly from Kemet and Knesset. Was this just part of the Gnostic BS? Because I've yet to come across this statement in the Medut in total. Right, so that notion that gods are immortal men, pure foolishness, not based in reality. It's based on politics on one end because crackers they have a god complex. They know they're inferior. They know they're inferior. So they want to pretend to be superior. So they look for what's the most superior. That's a god. So they're going to call themselves god or try to identify with that. They've convinced us that we're inferior as black or as human beings in general, even though it's not true, but they made us believe that, and some of us still believe that, so now we're trying to be quote-unquote gods and all kinds of nonsense. So saying gods are immortal men, nonsense. Men are mortal gods, nonsense. It's totally inaccurate. Even you'll find some Yoruba people trying to say, well, you know, human beings become Orisha, and people actually think that literally that's what they're talking about. And in reality, it's not true. The Orisha were never human beings. They were always divinity. They were created. They have their own Ori. They have their own Ayamo, their own function, destiny, executing the world. It's like we have our own functioning as human beings and then specifically as individuals in the world. So everything is assigned a specific function to execute in creation by the supreme being. Deities have their collective function. We have ours. And they interact with one another. And so does plant life, animal life, and mineral life as well. Okay, so what kind of people you say can see these discarnate spirits walking the earth with us? Very often, there are numerous people in our community who can see who are clairvoyant or clairaudient and clairvoyant. They can see spirits. Very often people who are in childhood, you can see them. People have those experiences. I'm sure there's somebody on the phone or everywhere else, you know, just wherever we are in the world and in this hemisphere as well, they'll tell you about experiences of them seeing a deceased spirit at some point. We're taught that we're not supposed to see ghosts. That's something wrong and all kinds of nonsense in this culture because they don't want us to connect with our ancestors and ancestors. Of course, our Nsamanfo and our Kwamo mind, the Kwamo Nation in North America have taught us that a hostage is one who is not allowed to communicate with their relatives. The whites and their offspring don't want us to communicate with the ancestresses and ancestors because they know if we listen to them, we will reject the whites and their offspring and only seek their extermination as opposed to trying to live under their rulership. So they keep us hostage through these fake religions that teach us that necromancy is wrong and geomancy is wrong, you know, communication with the deceased or you know, different forms of divination is wrong because they don't want us to listen to anyone but them. So we suppress our capacity to see. So when we see discarnate spirits, we don't want to tell anybody and all kinds of nonsense. We suppress it. Those who don't suppress them, they keep seeing them. They're being told that they're crazy because nobody else sees them. They go to a psychiatrist, go to a psych ward, get pumped full of medication. They hear voices. They can feel spirits. All they really need to do is work with their ancestral spirits, but nobody teaches them that, so they end up going into psych wards and everything else. And there's nothing wrong with them very often. We're not talking about people who have brain damage or a brain injury, traumatic brain injury, a TBI or something like that, or, you know, different things. We're talking about people who can see and hear and feel discarnate spirits, which has always been the case with a certain percentage of our population very easily, but the vast majority of us have some experience with them. They're being told that they're crazy, and then they get placed on medication. And the whites and their offspring know exactly what's happening. And this is why they put us on medication, because they don't want those kind of people sharing that information with the rest of the family and imploring the family to begin to develop their own spiritual sight and hearing and everything else, so we can start reconnecting with order and want to exterminate the spirits of disorder. So is there any validity in the lyrics of Sly and the Family Stone, "Everybody is a Star"? In reality, where that really comes from, and whether they knew the details of it or not, in ancient Kemet, one of the terms for the Aku, the ancestors and ancestors, are Aku, Akut, male and female term, that's defined as the illuminated ones or the shining ones. And they can be identified with stars, so to speak, but it's talking about the kind of spirit, the discarnate spirit we were just talking about. We talked about the radiant body, the reflection, and the Tsum Tsum takes up residence in that radiant body. When somebody is a spiritually cultivated ancestor or ancestress, that radiant body, that reflection, is very strong. So when people talk about having a strong aura, just the spirit body itself is radiant and powerful and effulgent. It's like a mini star in that sense. It's likened, quote-unquote, unto a star. It's not that we're stars, or that we come from a different star system. Of course, that's nonsense. We come from the Earth Mother. Asase Afua is our mother. So, the illuminated or shining one, the Aku or Akut, this is where that comes from, related as a title, a descriptive title of ancestresses and ancestors. Okay, so before we go forward, 8 minutes left in the live stream on the internet. So for those who would like to listen, we'll do a little bit of overtime to get through some more information. 8 minutes left, well, 7 minutes left. If you want to continue to listen after 11 o'clock, then you must call in and you can listen on the phone and you can ask questions as well, of course. But you have a little bit over six minutes now to call in. The number is 657-383-0635. 657-383-0635. Now, so you have just about, you're getting down to almost 6 minutes now to call in. All right. So, and for those who came in later, we talked about, number one, September 13th, we will be in Philadelphia doing a presentation on Nanasom, Afurakani, Afurakani, ancestral religion, as it relates to us in America that we've inherited through our blood circles directly from our ancestresses and ancestors. We'll be doing that presentation at the R Black Comeback Center, 25th and York, in Philadelphia at 1 p.m. Saturday, Memenada, September 13th. We sent a notification out. It's on the website. We sent it out through Facebook, on our Facebook group. We sent it out through our social network on the Ning platform. So check the website, check the web, Facebook group as well, our Compo Nanasom group on Facebook. As we were telling and relaying to the people earlier in the show, as we have been doing at every event that we've place that we presented at, whether it was we presented in a number of places, whether it was in Camp Springs, Maryland, or Baltimore, or Philadelphia, Wilmington, Delaware, Knoxville, Tennessee, Hartford, Connecticut, Virginia, a number of different places. Everywhere we've gone over the past, since last year, we've given a free copy of one of our soft cover books away to every single person who attended the event. We've done that at every event, and we want to continue that process. We're going to be doing that at this event as well. We now have 10 of our books in soft cover. Of course, the 15 books that we have, all of them are free ebooks online. But then the soft cover versions, we print ourselves on our own printers in-house in color. We sell those. They range between $8 and $11. We're going to be giving away free books. Of course, we're also working to print out enough copies of each book, so we're going to have the other books there available for purchase as well. For those who, what we're doing as a fundraiser between today and tomorrow morning, for those who are listening, the books range from $8 to $11. Sometimes people will buy the whole set of 10 books, which is like $96 plus shipping. What we're doing today and tomorrow as a way to raise funds for the free book giveaway and to generate funds to print out enough books for the rest of the population who want to purchase them on that weekend. And we have to order, we have to send out an order for a shipment for our ink to come in, so we colored ink so we can print. So between today and tomorrow, if you order 5 of our books, just go onto our website, ogfo.com, O-D-W-I-R-A-F, as in free, O.com/Nhoma, which is the publications page. And you'll find a link just on the first page, you know. If you order 5 today, between today and tomorrow, instead of us just sending you the 5, we'll send all 10. And that's, oh, wait, so you're basically getting them, instead of $96 for 10, which is basically on average $9.60 per book, you'll be getting all 10 for the price of about $50, all 10 books. So you're basically getting them for, on average, about $5 a book. One of our books is 8. 3 of them are $9, 5 of them are $10, and 1 of them is $11. So on average, they're about $10 each, the mean price. So between today and tomorrow, you order 5, pick any 5, and just order them just like you would normally order them. Just go into the website, pick the different ones you want, order them, and instead of sending you those 5, we will send all 10. This is the way we're trying to generate this little sale. We're trying to, you know, for the next, you know, 24 hours or whatever, we're trying to generate the funds so we can make sure we have that free book giveaway to give a free book to everybody who comes out, whether individuals can afford it or not. And sometimes there are people who are brand new. They've been taught that ancestral religion is devil worship and everything else, or African is ignorant and evil and all these different things, or they just don't have the funds. But they shouldn't have to not be able to get accurate information because they don't have the funds. Or at the same time, the whites and their offspring are giving away free Bibles and Qurans and other nonsense 24/7 all year round. So some of us should be giving away free copies of our publications, especially when it's accurate information. We have enough people who are authors who are selling high-priced books that they published with inaccurate information. Some of us should be giving away some free information when we can. So just go to our website, og.fo.com, the publications page. You can also call us at 202-717-0050 if you have any questions. If you order 5 books today or tomorrow, then we will send you 10. Okay, all 10, the entire set. Okay, may I say, I just saw somebody that they just ordered their 5. So may I say for that, we appreciate that. And share this information with your contacts as well. We appreciate that. Get out there. Okay. So let's get back to some more detailed information about the Nsama Info, their structure, and who they are. We're going to go to, there's an article on the website, Nsamain, Calm, and the Seven Senses. Nsamain, Calm, and the Seven Senses, Afurakani, Afurakani, or African Ancestral Communication. And we want to talk about different forms of communication. So we know who the ancestresses and ancestors are. We talked about the hierarchy between the Supreme Being, the deities themselves, which are the organs within the great divine body, the cells, which are plant life, animal life, mineral life, and Afurakani, Afurakaidi, human life, are the cells within the organs. The organs are the divinities, and then the organs are the smaller bodies within the great divine body, which is the supreme being. Again, that shows the difference between the cells and the organs, the human beings, and the deities, the cells and the organs. So again, there's a difference between cells and organs. There's a difference between human beings and deities. And the cells are never going to become, the heart cell is never going to become a heart. The liver cell is never going to become the liver. A human being is never going to become a deity, and there's no need for a human being to become a deity. That's nonsense. When people have a desire to be a deity, then you're dealing with somebody who has a problem. All right, so now we're going to get into the ways that the Nsamapo communicates, different ways. We have an article, of course, Nkomere Ancestral Shrine Communication, and we talk about, you know, the nature of the ancestral spirits and their relation to Supreme Being, as we talked about that hierarchy. People will establish a shrine, Nkomere, right? But then sometimes they'll feel like they're not getting communication from the Nsamapo. Now, let's get into different forms of communication so people know that there are different ways that they communicate and how they communicate. And sometimes you may not have even contextualized the communication that you're actually receiving, but you have actually received a communication or a series of communication that you just have not identified as such. And let me make sure, hold on one second, we're just pulling up a section. I want to make sure the section from one article is here. So give me one second, I'm just pulling it up. I want to see if we need to look at the, if anybody needs to look at the Nkomere article first before we get into that. Or not. Okay, so actually we don't really necessarily need to get into that one per se, because we want to kind of focus on the different forms of communication. So look at the Nsamaikom and the seven senses. So we start off talking about, many have questions with regards to spiritual communication or Nkom, which means spiritual communication, at the Nsamaikomere ancestral shrine. In Akwamu mind, in the Akwamu nation in North America, we use the term Nkomere to designate a shrine. Nkom means spiritual communication. Nkomere is a term that we use because Nkom means spiritual communication. Bede means three major things. Bede means time. Bede means place or space. Bede means a way or a manner. So when we talk about Nkom Bede, it is a space, Bede, that we engage in Nkom, spiritual communication. We engage at a specific time, ritual time, Bede. We engage in Nkom. And we engage spiritual communication and calm in a specific manner, Bere. So Nkomere means spiritual communication and calm, place, Bere, time, Bere, manner, Bere. So when we say Nkomere, it means shrine. Nsamaikomere is an ancestral shrine, an ancestral communication place, ancestral communication time, ancestral communication manner. Or way. And Abosomkomere is a deity shrine, which we'll talk about next week. So this is the Nsamaikomere ancestral shrine. So when we say many have questions with regard to spiritual communication and calm at the Nsamaikomere ancestral shrine, and we talked about, we mentioned that in our article, what the shrine is. Now, the Abosom, the forces in nature, are the powers in nature. They're the spiritual forces that animate creation, the forces that give power to the sun, the earth mother, the oceans, rivers, and so forth. They give us our power as well. And we take that power and utilize it to execute our function. It's like you utilize solar energy, heat in your body to execute your function. You utilize water in your body to replenish yourself and give you the kind of energy you need to execute your function. The spirit that animates the sun empowers that fiery part of your spirit. The spirit that animates the ocean empowers that cool, watery, magnetic part of your spirit. and so forth, earth and atmosphere and the respiratory system in the lungs, and you're connected to the wind and the atmosphere in your body, you know, your physical body connected to the earth mother and everything else. So the Abosom give you the power to execute your functioning creation and the means by which you open and close and utilize that power harmoniously. How do you expand that power? How do you contract that power? You're given the power. If you're assigned to a fiery divinity and you have a function to execute in the world, like you're in an immune system cell in the body, then you are one of those fiery individuals who your function in creation is to execute or uphold divine order in various ways. So you're naturally inclined towards defense, enforcing order, upholding justice, and things like that. Whether you're engaged in martial arts, military science, or security, or whatever it is, you're naturally inclined to seek out disorder and eradicate disorder to maintain the integrity of the system, your structure, your community, and so forth, just like your immune system and lymphatic systems destroy disordered cells, cancer cells, to maintain the integrity of the body. So if you have that kind of energy that governs you, like Benad, Abinah, who is Heru, Behudet, and Seshima, Sekhmet, and you're naturally inclined towards those kinds of behaviors, you're going to end up being inclined towards an occupation or developing a business whereby you can execute that kind of function in creation because you're naturally inclined towards it. Benad and Abinah, these are both home, will give you the power, that fiery power you need to be able to execute that kind of function. You're not going to be given that kind of function and not be given the power, the kind of power you need to execute that function. You're not going to be given a cool, watery energy if you were assigned a fiery function and fiery divinity. So they give you that power, and they show you how to utilize that power in harmony with order, how to expand it and contract it, open it and close it, and so forth. That's what the Abosom do, the forces in nature. The Nananom and Samafo, the ancestresses and ancestors, they show you how to execute your function based on your specific genetic and spiritual makeup, your ancestry. There are many different people on the continent who are connected to a fiery divinity. The Abosom that operates through the sun or the planet Benab, Mars, and so forth, or thunder and lightning like Yao and Akan and Shango in the Yoruba tradition, So, or Hebioso and Vodun, Heru, son of Osa and Aset in ancient Kemet. There are many people who are connected to that force of nature, but because we come from different ethnic groups and certain clans, because we migrated to different areas of the continent, had different experiences, and we took in the energy in different ways. Some of us lived in riverine areas. We took on the energy in that region and incorporated it into our blood circle, meaning eating the food in that area, the game in that area, taking on the energy of that region, incorporating into our blood cells. And when we had children, they resonated the frequency of the energy from that region. Some moved to a mountainous region, do the same thing. Some moved to a desert region and nomadic, they do the same thing. Some moved to a savanna region. Different places, different local divinities incorporated in the family, things like that. So because we move to different regions, we have a different true story, the way we interact with the world, the way we've interacted with one another, how we've combined with other groups, and we're a certain kind of ethnic group now. The way we take in the fiery energy of Benna is different than another group. It may be similar, but it's different based on our true story, based on our migration, based on the things we did do and things we didn't do. So therefore, we can't take on that energy the same way some other ethnic group thousands of miles away from us on the continent will. Just like some of you may be allergic to, you know, bananas or something, and somebody else may not be. That's, you have to adhere to that specific taboo or etchiwadie, because if not, you get sick, whereas somebody else, because of their history, their true history, their genetic history, they don't have a problem with bananas, but you do. Somebody in your family can eat a food and you can't eat it. And somebody in your clan can eat a food, you can't eat it. There are certain clan etuwadiye or taboos that are food taboos for everybody in the clan because of our genetic history, because of migrations to different regions and so forth. Only the ancestresses and ancestors, the Nananoma and Samanfo, who mastered life, as people within those groups know those specific etuwade as they apply to the group, so they can teach us how do we utilize the energy that's given by the Abo song in a harmonious fashion based on the specific ancestral clan that we come from and the way we incorporate that energy. So everybody's using the energy, but it's the way we use it that's different. All of us need oxygen, just like fish need oxygen. But because we have different ancestries and the way we are structured to live life differently, we can't take in oxygen the same way fish can, because if we tried to breathe underwater, of course, we would die. We have to take in the same element from nature, oxygen, differently than they do. It's the same thing with different Afurakani ethnic groups. We take in or incorporate the energy of the Abosong differently based on our ancestry and what has happened with us over thousands of years. So we'll be a divinity of the sun or the moon. The sun is shining on all of us in different ethnic groups on the continent and in the Western Hemisphere. But because of our ancestry, the way we take in solar energy and process it through our specific ritual songs and ritual dances and ritual prayers and forms of divination and clothing is slightly different than the way another group on the continent will take it in based on their form of ritual song, ritual dance, clothing, and divination and so forth. Only the Nsamanfo know the ins and outs of our specific ancestral clan taboos, and they can teach us not only the Abosong give us the power and how to open and close that power, how to shut it on and shut it off and not be destroyed by it or misuse it, because they will take it away from us if we even try to misuse it. But once we have the capacity to open it up and close it and utilize it, how do we utilize it based on our ancestry? Our Nsamanfo show us that. And again, you have that hierarchy. You have the cells. You have the water surrounding the cells, the ancestral community. You have the organ itself, which is the deity, the divinity, the Abosong. And then, of course, the organ is the child of the great body. So there's a hierarchy of how the energy comes from the great body through the organ, through the water in the organ to the cell. The energy comes from the supreme being through the deities, through the ancestral spirits directly to us. So the ancestral spirits transmit the tumi, as we call it in our con, the power of the Abosong directly to us through our blood circle. By virtue of being born and incarnate through a specific blood circle, we receive that energy, and it comes through us from the spirit realm when it's given to us by Inyamewa and Inyame. Before we incarnate into a spirit realm, we go before Inyamewa and Inyame. They give us a kra, our soul, our divine consciousness, a deity that is assigned to our head region that we communicate with throughout our lives. They give us a specific function that's encoded within our kra, our spiritual head, spiritual brain. They assign us to certain Abosong. Then they send us through a specific blood circle. And the Nsamanfo take that spirit from there and send it through one of their specific blood circles, send us into a womb from one of those blood circles, or through a male that's, you know, and connecting to that male and whoever he ends up copulating with. Then if you're a spirit connected to that male, your male descendant on earth, whoever he copulates with, your spirit is going to go through him because you're connected to his sperm cell, and you'll get into that womb that way. Sometimes you're connected to a female descendant, and whoever she copulates with, you're connected to her. So whoever she copulates with, you're connected to her ovum, so whenever that ovum is fertilized, your spirit goes and takes up residence in that newly fertilized ovum. We talked about some of that last week. So the Nsamanfo are the ones that take the energy of the Abosong and show us the tumi of the Abosong. As they say, the ashe of the Orisha. In our con tradition, the tumi, the power of the Abosong. And they transmit that tumi directly to us, to their descendants, through our blood circles. That's why we carry the energy of the Abosong in our kra nemoja, our soul, and our blood. It's not given to us. If somebody, you go to somebody, pay them a few thousand dollars, they give you a shrine and do a ritual for you, and now you have an Orisha, now you have a Vodou, and now you have a deity. You have a shrine, but the deities come into the world with you, connected to your spirit before you even get into a womb. They are assigned to you or given to you by Unyamewa, Unyame, and no one else can assign an Abosom to you. Only the Supreme Being can do that. And then Ra and Ra'et, Nyonkopon, Nyonkopon, the other Yabosom, and then later the Nsamanfo, the Nanonoma Nsamanfo, the ancestors and ancestors, in concert with the Yabosom, connect that energy to you, and then send you through a specific blood circle. So that's how we get that energy. So then we go to this article, the Nanonoma Nsamanfo, spiritually cultivated ancestors and ancestors, communicate with us, Afurakani, Afurakani people in various ways. Each person's experience at his or her Nkomre or shrine will be different, although there will be similar experiences that we can share. Now, we talk about people say they don't feel like they're communicating. This article is about the seven senses and how the Nsamanfo communicate through seven senses. We don't just have five senses. That comes from the whites and their offspring, the Greeks and so forth, and they limit things to five. We have seven senses. Of course, they're connected in our Kan culture through the Abosom of the 7 days of the week, the solar, lunar, and planetary bodies that govern that seven-day cycle. And we talk about these seven senses in this article. Of course, there's sight, there's hearing, touch, feeling, taste, smell, and so forth. The two that are missing are time and balance. Of course, you have a sense of sight. Everybody knows that. You have a sense of smell. You have a sense of taste. You have a sense of touch or feeling. You have a sense of hearing. But you also have a sense balance. If you didn't have a sense of balance, you wouldn't be able to sit up in your chair right now. You would fall over. If you didn't have a sense of balance and you didn't exercise that sense of balance, you wouldn't be able to stand up straight, you would fall over, you wouldn't be able to ride a bike. There are many things you wouldn't be doing right now. That sense of balance is key to your very every moment existence, all day long. It's like your sense of sight and hearing and so forth. You can function without a sense of sight. You can't really function without a sense of balance. You can function without a sense of hearing, per se. People are deaf, but they still have a sense of balance. Your smell can be cut off for a minute, you're congested or whatever, but you still have a sense of balance. So that's very key. It's just as key as any of the other senses. Then there's a sense of time, and time includes space and distance considerations and so forth. So let's look at these different senses, not in, just in the physical sense, but also in the spirit sense. Now, we talked about, you know, the five senses. You can discern the differences between shapes and colors through sight, the differences between discerning the differences between sweet and bitter and sour and through taste, and different sound vibrations through hearing, different textures or temperatures and vibrations through touch and feeling, different aromas through smelling, these different things have a physiological effect upon us, like different shapes, colors, sounds, taste, aromas, temperatures, vibrations affect bodily processes and thought patterns and hence behavior. So people use aromatherapy and color therapy and sound therapy. These different things can affect you physiologically and affect your behavior. Of course, sounds can cause vibrations, music, people singing, they can break a glass if they're singing at a pitch. Sound vibrations can affect physical matter. And those vibrations can affect your physical body, your heart, your lungs, your organs, your brain cells, and can affect your thought and therefore your behavior. Same thing with energy coming from colors, aromas, shapes, and everything else. Triggering memories, fears, healing responses, disease patterns, fears, desires, and so forth. And those things affect behavior. The same is true of balance and time. We talked about the sense of balance, how you're dependent on that. Your sense of time affects your awareness, even your sanity. You can become disoriented maladaptive if you lose your sense of time. On a mundane level, you can lose your sense of time and crash a car before snapping out of a trance. So you're not aware of what's going on in three-dimensional time. You're kind of daydreaming, and before you know it, you hit something, and you snap out of that sense of time. You're not focused. Your sense of time is not focused on where it should be. It's disaligned at that point, and you can cause problems. You can become disoriented. Now, these seven senses, as we say, are heightened in the spiritual realm. When dealing with the Unsamaphon, our both on these various forms of perception, arte, are the vehicles by which they communicate. So some have the capacity to see beyond the physical. Of course, all of us typically can see, but people can see beyond the physical. They can see discarnate spirits and so forth. In English, they're called clairvoyant. They can see beyond the physical. Some can see beyond the, hear beyond the physical. They can hear ancestral spirits communicating with them and so forth. They're clear audience. That's an English term, of course. Some have the capacity to feel, touch beyond the physical. They're clear sentient. They can feel a spirit walking by them. They can feel the heat of some spirit moving by them, feel the spirit touch them, grab them, or whatever. They're clear sentient. Hot energy, cool energy, calm energy, and so forth. Vibrations, that kind of thing. Some have the capacity to pick up on scent beyond the physical. They're clear alien. They can smell like a different ancestral spirit comes forward. They may not be able to see them or hear them, but they can smell. A certain smell will come forth. That's a certain kind of ancestral spirit, certain divinity. Another smell, they know there's a different ancestral spirit in the house, and that's how they communicate. And it's a powerful form of unkalm or spiritual communication. Some have the capacity to pick up on taste beyond the physical, clear gustance, as they call it. They will notice sweet or sour or bitter, pungent taste, feeling, depending upon the kind of unsamaphon that comes forward, depending upon the questions that they ask. That's a form of divination, actually, just like these various things are forms of spiritual communication or divination, discerning the differences based on these things. So instead of seeing a spirit, hearing a spirit or something, you get a sour taste in your mouth, certain spirit comes forward. Different spirit comes forward, you get a sweet taste in your mouth. Some people are clear goosting like that. That's the way Unsamaphon will communicate with them. Now, some have the capacity to experience balance or imbalance beyond the physical. We call that term clear equilibrium. Unsamaphon will communicate with them through this sense. Unsamaphon will create balance within the individual when they come forth at the encombre. A misguided ancestral spirit will create imbalance within the spiritual head of the individual. So you'll feel imbalance when a certain spirit comes forward. You'll feel balance when a certain kind of spirit comes forward. When you start feeling wayward, imbalance, dizzy, and things like that, because certain spirits come forward, that's a form of divination. You can determine or discern what kind of energy is there, or even answers to questions that will make you feel a certain way, whether you're feeling balanced or imbalanced. You can determine whether or not this is a yes or a no, just on a rudimentary level. That's clear equilibrium. You can discern the differences between balance and imbalance. That's the way the spirits communicate with you. Some have the capacity to experience this time-space continuum beyond the physical. We call that clairtimience. We use clair equilibrance and clairtimience. We coin these terms because the Whites and Offspring typically don't talk about the seven senses. They talk about five, so they don't talk about the spiritual sense of balance and the spiritual sense of time, so they don't have terms for that. Sometimes they'll try to add a sixth sense like this, sense of thought or intuition or something like that, but that's not really accurate. They're trying to throw things in there, throw them together. They were trying to make the senses fit the seven chakras, and they misinform people about that, so they stick two other ones in there that just sound all right, so they'll make something up. But they don't have the proper sixth and seventh sense, which is space and time and balance. So we have to coin those terms, clair equilibrium, clairtimience. Some people have the capacity to experience the time-space continuum beyond the physical. This can happen, for example, when you are asleep and the alarm clock goes off, you awaken to hit the 5 minutes snooze. You fall back asleep and experience a whole range of activities that would normally take hours to complete, only to be awakened 5 minutes later by the alarm clock. And some people will use the sense of time, often producing a trance or a die sleep or suspended state within the individual as encombre in order to communicate with the individual. Then some people can, quote-unquote, slow time down or speed it up. Take the person to the future or past. This is waking trance or conscious dreaming. You'll wake up, come out of the trance, not realizing you have been at the encombre for hours. So just like it happens when you're asleep, you have all kinds of experiences, and 5 minutes later the snooze wakes you up, you are operating on a different sense or dimension of time spiritually because the spirit moves faster. To give another example of the way the spirit moves faster than us physically, it's similar to if you see a baby crawling towards a certain object on the floor, they're moving slowly. You could walk in front of them, go get the object, move it, put another object there, and then walk back behind them before they can get to the object. The Ensemapo are like that. We're like the baby. They're like the adult. They can move ahead of us in the direction that we're going, change things around before we get there. And when we get there, something has changed because they're moving quicker in the spirit realm than we are. That's part of the space-time continuum, spatial distance considerations and so forth. Give me 1 second right quick, get some water, I'll be right back. Okay, so those are the 7 senses, and we talked about the different ways that these are the means by which the Ensemapo communicate with us on a spiritual level, different forms. Some people will be more clairvoyant. Some people won't be. Some people be more clairaudient. Some people be more clairsentient. They can feel things, but they don't see or hear. Some people smell things. Some people get that balance or imbalance when the spirit moves through them, or if they have a negative thought, or if they're trying to find out what they should do or what they shouldn't do, and they get an imbalance feeling until they start focusing on the thing they should do, and then they get that balance feeling. That's more a clear equilibrance. Some people, the space-time continuum, they go into a trance, daydreaming, and things like that. Some people take them out of their normal focus and change the time continuum to a certain extent to communicate with them and so forth. These are different ways that they communicate. We also have here, it talks about the various forms of encombre usually are used singly or in combination by the ensemble depending upon the individual who is at the encombre. When such encombre is affected, it is invariably followed in some fashion by confirmation in the physical world through the course of your regular day. Things that you saw, heard, felt, smelled, tasted, balanced, or timed, quote-unquote, at the encombre will manifest through people you come into contact with during the day. Very often they will verbally confirm what you were given at the encombre. At night, of course, the same kind of confirmation can be given via dreams. Dreams tend to become increasingly vivid as work at the encombre or the ancestral shrine increases. And we said before, these are forms of divination. One of the major ways, of course, not only through dreams that the Ensemapo communicate with us, it's also like at the shrine, they often plant thoughts into the head of the individual. So while you're sitting at the shrine, the more time you spend in susuho or meditation, asking and listening to the Ensemapo, you begin to notice that there are streams of thoughts that come in at your normal thoughts, and then you have streams of thoughts and ideas that come in that are not yours, and you'll begin to be able to discern the difference between those kinds of thoughts and ideas that are not yours, that are coming from the Ensemapo, that normally things you wouldn't think about or didn't know, and your own thoughts and ideas. This is a means by which they communicate. Let me make sure there was no some questions on the in the chat room, and of course, people on the phone line. If you had a question, you could hit the number 1 to raise your hand. Just want to check through chat room right quick to see what if there were any questions here. Let's see. Okay, I'm just reading through right quick to make sure I didn't miss anything. Okay. And somebody had a question about a ritual prayer. Yes, so, and also, we also have on the front page of the website, ojidafo.com, there's a particular document called, it's called a sample Apai or prayer from Kemet using Akan tree or Akan vocalization. So it's a long title, but it's on the website. You scroll down past the introduction and the link near the bottom, and it's one of those links. It's a link to a prayer composed in the language of ancient Kemet. We have an introduction. We show the connection between the Akan language and the language of ancient Kemet and why we use the vocalizations, meaning the vowels and so forth, from the Akan language to pronounce the words. And then we have a prayer composed in the language of ancient Kemet. We have the English translation, and then we also have a link in that document to an audio file where we're actually saying the prayer so you can hear it, and it's a libation prayer, a prayer, or just a prayer that you can use in libation or regular prayer in the language of Kemet. So even if you don't know what ancestral clan you come from at this particular time, you can always use the language of ancient Kemet to connect with your ancient ancestresses and ancestors, and it's their responsibility to direct you to your specific ancestral clan that you incarnated through. So that's that procedure. So you can get to that on the website. Okay, and there's one other piece we just wanted to give some information that's related here so people can see, given that structure of who the Nsamafo are distinct from the Abosom, we've already done that. We talked about the 7 spiritual senses, and these are the means by which people communicate. So sometimes, some people, it's not always about you're going to see a spirit walking around because everybody's not clairvoyant. Some people won't see that, but they will hear the Nsamafo. But then everybody's not clairaudient. They may not hear them, but they will feel the Nsamafo. They'll feel heat or coolness or energy moving through the space. But then some people won't feel it that way. They're clairalien. They'll smell something. Some people are clairgustant. They'll taste something. Some people are clairequilibrant. They'll feel a shift in their balance or imbalance in their body. Their body may rock from one side or another. They'll feel imbalanced, lightheaded, and so forth. And some people notice a shift in the time continuum. They lose track of time when the spirit comes by, and then they snap out of it, just like some people daydream and things like that. But this is based on when an Nsamafo comes forward at the shrine. But then they will confirm these things through the course of the day. They will put certain things or put you in front of people that will communicate to you the same message you heard at the shrine, whether the person knows why they're doing it or not, to confirm that. And the more you have these experiences, you'll be able to identify, wait a minute, this is a confirmation in detail of what physically of what the Nsamafo showed me at the shrine spiritually, and I didn't even pick up on it. Of course, through the dream state, they communicate, and also planting thoughts in the head of the individual, thoughts that you begin to realize, these are not my own constructions, either coming from the Abosom and the Nsamafo. And this is why we say, of course, in this other article, Ojidafo and Akwamu Mai, we touch on this as well, which is a separate article. We mentioned thus in varying capacities, especially beginning in early childhood, Afurakani, Afurakani, people have the ability to see the spirits of the Nsamafo as they show themselves to us on occasion, hear the Nsamafo speak to us on occasion, feel the touch and presence of the Nsamafo around the house and in nature on occasion, experience unique and peculiar smells or tastes of the energy of the Nsamapo when they are present amongst us, have time, space, shifting experiences, losing track of time when the Nsamapo communicate with us, experience a shift in our ability to maintain equilibrium when the Nsamapo are present. Example, some people's bodies will rock or they will experience dizziness when the Nsamapo make their presence felt. The Nsamapo also communicate with us through our Achinebwa, our animal totems. Certain animals therefore function as messengers of the Nsamapo, appearing at critical times in our lives. The Nsamapo see intuitions into our spirits, help us to overcome illness, warn us of danger, inform us of details on subjects that we would otherwise not know, urge us to call a friend, family member, or community member when that person is going through a trying situation, give us messages to forward to friends, family members, or community members who have been praying for an answer to a difficult problem, often to a fictional God like Jesus, Allah, Yahweh, Brahman, etc. In truth, it is the Abosom, the divine spirits of creation, in creation, and the persons in Nsamapo who hear their prayers and direct our Nsamapo to give the message of truth to them. The message is the solution that they prayed for, which is expressive and impressive of divine order. So, we were talking, so in that particular article, we had reiterated some of the information, added some information regarding the Nsamapo and how they communicate. So we have that article, Nkomre, Ancestral Shrine Communication. It talks about the nature of the Nsamapo. That one doesn't go into as much detail as we went into tonight in the separate article, The Origin of the Term Nsamapo and Kemet. That's the one we focused on tonight to go into the nature of who the Nsamapo are. The Nkomre Ancestral Shrine Communication article, it summarizes who the Nsamapo are and their relationship to us and the Abosom and so forth and our functioning creation. And then it talks about the ancestral shrine and how to establish a basic shrine, things that you can utilize, implement. And there's a prayer in the tree language on that page. But then, again, on the front page of the website, that document calls the sample apai, or prayer from the language of Kemet, using the Akan or Twi vocalizations. That you can use that prayer as well. If you're not Akan, you don't know what group you come from, you can always use the language of Kemet, which is the parent language, and we're not talking about just a dynastic or pre-dynastic language of Kemet going back, 6,000 years. We're talking about the same language that our ancestresses and ancestors spoke about when they were talking about the founding of the dynasties of Kemet. And if you look at the Shethu, or the so-called papyrus that they call the papyrus of Turin, they will talk about the divine dynasties, and they give calculations. And when you look at those calculations, it goes back to the first divine dynasties beginning about 42,000 years ago in Kemet. So they've given the proper date. Now, of course, the whites and their offspring try to make things much, much, much later than that. But then when you look at the archaeology of ancient Kemet, you'll find that in the Sudan, they find artifacts that are 70-plus thousand years old, and then you'll find that in Kemet itself, they find a skeleton that's over 30,000 years old, and they find evidence of us 40-plus thousand years ago using different kinds of technology with regard to arrowheads and bones and being carved and so forth in specific ways. They find evidence of ritual and things like that. So they know that we've been around for more than 6 or 7 or 10,000 years in Kemet. This goes back thousands, about tens of thousands of years ago, and comports with what the Papyrus of Turin says, the beginning of the divine dynasty. Divine dynasties are just talking about, when they talk about the deities ruling Kemet, meaning people who had these divinities as their head divinities taking up residence on the throne. When people are communicating with these people, they do divination, communicate with these deities, and the word of the deities are the rule that comes from the palace, comes from the king and the queen mother, so the deities are literally ruling. Just like if you go to a priest, they get possessed by an abosom, and abosom speaks through them. You're not getting a judgment or a direction from the priest. You're getting direction from the deity that's speaking through the priest. If the deity says, pass this specific law and make this part of the law of the land, then you say the deity just gave a law. The deity is ruling through the people. So when they talk about the divine dynasty, that's what they're talking about. They're not talking about Yabosom flying into command on spaceships and sitting in a palace all day and ruling people. That's not what they're talking about. And we talked about some of that earlier. So we talk about the language, of course. We're talking about over 40,000 years ago in ancient command. So that's what we mean. And this article, we just kind of, that Ojirafo in our formal mind article, we touched on that in the beginning. So we talked about these various forms through the seven senses they communicate through, also through the Achinebwa animal totems. And you'll notice and you'll start to make this assessment when you're doing Susuho and beginning just to reawaken yourself. You start looking back over your life since you were a child. What certain animals showed up, were prominent in your life at certain critical junctures. Some people it'll be crows, some people it'll be certain kinds of cats, some people it'll be a hawk, some people are bats at a certain time, some people eagles, different things. And you'll start finding that these are animal totems in different cultures connected to certain clans, animal totems associated with certain divinities that you see in ancient Kemet, but also all over the continent. Same animal totems, Achinebwa, and they communicate and send those animals, the Nsamafo will send those animals to show up at specific times to give you messages from the ancestral realm. So there are various ways that the Nsamafo communicate. Sometimes you may not have contextualized the communication properly and assumed, which many people sometimes do, is say, well, they're not communicating, I didn't hear or see anything, but they actually showed a specific animal or showed a specific thing or caused a, you know, imbalance in a certain way when you asked a question or you were about to embark on a certain project and they gave that imbalance and you felt sick or imbalanced or dizzy every time you tried to move in that direction. You said, you know what, I was feeling sick and I just decided I wasn't going to do it. Every time I thought about it, I got sick. In reality, your Nsamafo were communicating with you. That was a form of divination. And then when you look over the course of your life, you'll notice that this is the way they've been communicating with me all along. They've been there the whole time. Well, sometimes it'll be done in different ways. So these are the various major ways they communicate, and that's what those articles go into. So, all right, so it's 11:45. We're going to end here. We will get back next week. We will complete this information dealing with a little bit more on the Nsamafo, and then we're going to deal with the Abosom in detail. We're going to get into that and their relationship to us, our own Kradim Bosom, as well as the Abosom of the, you know, not only the 7 days of the week, but also their relationship to us and the Nananoma Nsamafo and the Supreme Being and so forth. So we're going step by step defining ancient authentic icon ancestral religion so people will not be confused. We can embrace our culture from the standpoint of our own blood, Nananom Nsamanfo, and you know what Nsamanfo means now. And, of course, we got the details about Nananom last week. So, and, of course, you can listen to that archive as well. So, again, tomorrow, Ojida, 9 p.m., of course, the same station, and then the next day, Wednesday, Awukoda, we'll be dealing with the Egua Marketplace. Check the website for the details about tomorrow's show. And let other people know as well. And try to come in at 9 p.m. so we can get started right away. So you don't miss anything. And, of course, you can always check out the archives on the Blog Talk channel. And, again, for those who came later on the show, we were talking about our free book giveaway. And coming up in Philadelphia for one of the copies of our book, but we were also talking about the fact that between tonight and tomorrow, We have a special. We have 10 softcover books that we sell. They range from $8 to $11. Sometimes people will buy the whole set, which is $96. What our special is from between today and tomorrow, because we're trying to generate funds to order some ink to print out some more books for this free book giveaway, as well as the other books that we're going to have for the people in Philadelphia next weekend, not this weekend, 6th, but on the 13th. If you order 5 books from the website today, between today and tomorrow, just that time period, then we will actually send you the whole 10. So you'll get 10 instead of 5. So you'll basically be getting twice as many books for the same price, for the price, half price. 5 books, the price of 5 books, you'll actually get 10. So just go to the Nhoma page on our website, ojirafo.com, the Nhoma or publications page. When you go to the website and you see the link that says publications, you click there, pick any 5 books, purchase the 5 books, and after you make the purchase, we will send you not just those 5, but we will send you the other 5 as well. Yerase, Mirase, we thank you for your support in this effort and for sharing the information. And, of course, you know, you won't be sorry when you purchase the books because there's a great deal of information that we cover in our publications. We will connect with you tomorrow. Please share our information, share the archives and the links and so forth. Connect with us on Facebook and on the NEEM site and on ojirafo.com. We will connect with you tomorrow on Ojira. And Yerase, we thank you. Yebeshia.